I don't know that many Japanese words. But what I do know is that this is Beyond the Basement, the complete
breakdown podcast.
Oh, dude, for so long I've been intending to record a musical bit for that. All right, well, welcome to the show. I hate to introduce myself at this point in the Attack on Titan series. This is basically over. So if this is your first time, I'm Eric. Over here we have
Rachel.
And over here,
I'm Papa Pete. How you doing?
He is Papa Pete. He's got four kids. True. So there is indeed. Actually, there's multiple Papas in the room now. I got one on the way.
Let's go.
So we're Beyond the Basement. We're doing the podcast. Again, if you're, for some reason it's your first time, we've done the entire Attack on Titan series up to current, and we are anime only. We legit don't know what's going to happen. So, with this finale episode, which I know we're kind of late in the game, we did our reaction. That's already up on YouTube. You can go find that, of course. And then we did like an initial just like hot take, you know,
10
minutes of our thoughts like right after we watched it. But it was so long, I was like, I don't think we can afford to do a 2-hour podcast on 20-minute episodes multiple times. Yeah. So I was like, I don't think. Anyway.
No way in the world.
The plan for this one was this final... I guess it's not a movie. They're calling it an episode, but it's an extended episode. Is almost an hour, and then they just, even in the show, they naturally just divide it up into two different chapters.
Which is very convenient.
It is. The first one's called The Rumbling, and part two is called Sinners, which I should have put that in the title for this stinking live stream. But at any rate, it'll be there. So we're going to do Rumbling today, this week, tonight, Friday, and then next week we're going to do Sinners. So we're just going to divide it in two. I don't know how long these episodes are going to be, because 30 minutes of content is extra. Anyway, whatever. Join us for the fun.
We will try not to take 7 hours to talk about the 30 minutes of content that we just consumed.
Or if you're into that kind of thing, maybe we will.
Maybe that's what the people want.
Maybe you like that.
Yeah, so you can let us know.
If we go for 7 hours, there is a 100% chance that at some point I will doze off in the middle of...
Especially at the end of a week.
We'll just be raging and Rachel just passed
out. I'll just be like...
I can't believe
she died
in the flames.
It's okay, guys. I snore, so you'll know when I'm asleep.
So... just a heads up or just a reminder here at the beginning of the episode, if you do have input, questions, comments, stuff that you like and or don't like, we welcome all of it. My love language is people hitting me back and debating. So you can email us at BeyondTheBasementPodcast.
Eric likes it when people yell at
@gmail.com. It's a thing. So some of us are wired that way. That's how I am. Yeah, email us there. Like I said, your thoughts. I actually really, this especially right here, this is the perfect point. If you are an anime-only person, like us, if you like legit don't know how it's going to end, I really want to hear from those people what you think's going to happen in the very last
what
episode.
What you think's going to happen.
Be wrong with us.
And
okay?
What you want to happen.
Yeah, both would be good.
I want to hear both, because...
And if you're watching on YouTube, put it down in the comments. Same thing. Like, tell us what is it that you want to happen, and also what do you think's actually going to happen. Yeah.
And if you know what's going to happen, don't judge anybody, okay? You didn't know what was going to happen when you were reading the manga for the first time, all right?
I'm telling you, it's always so tough. In retrospect, to get an honest answer from people whether or not they saw something coming, because it definitely feels good to be like, oh, yeah, I saw that coming, because I do feel good when I actually see it coming. Yeah. But the thing is, like, if I'm honest, there's definitely shows and different stuff or whatever where I, like, didn't see it coming. I really don't see the ending. And you and I are both always talking about this. We're both analyzing the story. We do this podcast is happening in my mind, but when I watch anything, I'm always trying to go, okay, well, how, you know, what would the writer do here? And it's not unenjoyable. It's enjoyable for me. But...
I definitely do that more now than I did before.
Yeah.
With literally everything.
Because we do it every week.
Telling my mom about Avatar, the Way of Water. And I was like telling her all the things I thought about the story and like how I felt. She was like, so you hated it. I'm like, no, it's actually okay. But I feel like they could have done better here and here and here and here. And I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, welcome, it's a weird.
Welcome to the,
weird acquired skill that we've gotten over the course of doing
this
show.
But to me, this is normal because I'm with you guys all the time. And like, this is what we do.
Yep, this is the standard.
I talk to someone outside of our bubble and they're like, oh, so you hate it then. And I'm like, no, actually, I don't hate it.
I'm just connecting all the dots.
I do the same thing when people are telling me a story.
Yeah.
And they're bad at telling stories. I'm taking their pieces and I'm retelling myself the story in a better way.
It's better if you just rearrange these things a little bit and maybe do this instead because it's more interesting. Yeah.
No, there's definitely times where I thought I should have became a lawyer for that reason because I feel like this I can is take somebody's half an hour story yes. and can get the highlights out of them and just be like, okay, I can re-say your story, but half the time. Is that okay?
Yeah. Do you ever feel internally enraged when someone's taking way too long to get to the point?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I feel like my brain is going to come out of my ears. Like, would you just get to the point?
We're married, so we know exactly what that's like. Yeah.
This is how it is.
Tudigol says, I need them to explain in detail about the war between the Nine Titans and also finally understand how the Pure Titans works. So you were the best guys. Well, welcome and thank you for joining.
Thanks for tuning in to the live stream. That's a good point,
all of that. I want to know all those things too. Also, what the heck is going on with Historia? Like, where is she?
That's the thing. Is this episode, we can start this episode officially by saying that the number of unanswered questions still at this point is pretty large.
It's astronomical.
Yeah. My hunch is that stuff like Tutankhamun. I don't know how to say. I'm really bad at
Tutankhamun. We're calling you Tutankhamun from I can't see the chat.
The war between the Nine Titans, how the Pure Titans work. Yeah, okay, those are two questions where I think at best we're gonna get like kind of an inference. And needs to be, I don't know if there is, maybe in the manga something like this exists. I really desperately wish there was, some kind of extracurricular.
Can you give us like a little screenshot that explains all those things? Yes.
No, 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 no. I don't want that. I'll tell you what I want. Say what I really, really want. I want this. I'm guessing the next episode, by the way, is not going to be only an hour long. It's going to be like an hour and 20 minutes because they can't get all the crap they want into 1 hour anyway.
Yeah. But then, Charlock will probably know the answer to this. Do you know how many chapters are left in the manga from this point?
Three or four?
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm guessing what's going to happen, the show's going to end. The studio's gonna be like, cool, can we make some more money off of this?
Let's make a movie.
And then
if they're like American,
great things we could do. Okay, we could have the owl. Isayama can make an entire series about the owl and like espionage and like running around and like figuring out in Marley and like transferring the power. Like where'd he get it from? And how long was it hidden underground?
I think the early days of like
Go ahead.
The early days, right after Ymir gets her powers and she's fighting by half of the Eldian Empire, the expansion of the Empire, that could be its own series as well.
Yes, yeah. And the War of the Nine Titans, you can make an entire series about
Titan
that.
Wars.
That could be an entire, you know, like one the Rise season of Marley. Show or whatever. Yeah. Like, obviously, do it better than what Amazon's doing now with the Rings of Power, but like Lord of the Rings, there's so much lore out there that you could just pick a time and it won't have to affect anybody and you could just tell us a story about the time.
Yeah, kind of within that.
Just make it a good story and don't trash the freaking lore that people love with all of their heart. Anyway.
No, it's a real problem.
Kruger's prequel, that would be awesome.
I know that, I mean, Star Wars has done this in the hands of Disney especially, but even long before that you had the Star Wars universe, and then within the Star Wars universe you have these different stories that get told that are even considered canon. There's different Star Wars books and comics and several video games, even the Fallen Order, most
Clone
recent
Wars.
Ones Clone Wars, all that stuff is you know considered part of like Star Wars canon. And the way that the story works is that it's extracurricular, just sort of outside of the movie. It doesn't affect it, but it takes place, and
it doesn't have this trash on anybody. Like, making content isn't a zero-sum game. This is why I hated like the prequels and stuff, is because they trashed on things that existed. Yeah. This is why I hated the afterquels or whatever. What are they called? The sequels. 7, 8, and 9. They trashed on.
The
reason people are into the freaking show.
It's because of what you did.
It's because of the originals, right? This is the reason people love the show. You don't have to trash on it. Just imagine this. A space cowboy goes off and does bounty hunter stuff. We love the freaking Mandalorian because on the show.
I love that show.
It just takes some piece and says, what if?
It's so
what
amazing.
If this happened?
It's still
what
happening inside the universe that you know and love. And
you can tell whatever story. The canvas is unlimited, right?
Yes.
This is what we could do in Attack on Titan. Give us an entire show about the series of the Owl. Give us an entire show about Kruger. Give us an entire show about the War of the Nine Titans. You can make new characters. You could make up weird stuff that happens.
Show us what really happened with that Helios guy.
You could actually even
tell us the true story because nobody really knows.
Add a few. You don't have to directly sew them together, but just add a few like tendrils of how it could have ended up.
Yeah.
In
remember the story of the miner? There's that long text in that one extra episode. So the miner tried to dig under the walls and he was so far and he couldn't get under there and he got like abducted one day. Like now, granted. Part of the reason I was bringing this up is because there is OVA episodes that are, and Isayama wrote
Lost Girls.
The Lost Girls, or is it the Notebook one?
That one, yes.
Ilsa's Notebook. Yeah. I know he wrote at least one of them, which when you watch them, you can tell which one is his because it's much more like serious and sober than the other ones.
Yeah, yeah. He kills at least three kids.
Dark and violent.
He's like, I got quotas.
There's a lady dying in a tree. And
yes, indeed. Yeah. Without a face.
Screaming and crying and stuff.
So yeah, I would like to see some of that stuff to kind of answer some of those questions. It's, for me personally, the biggest question absolutely is the little spine thing that gets in Ymir and she gets the powers.
Yeah. Where did it come from?
Where did it come from? Where did it go? Joe, I just...
I'd have been married a long time ago.
Okay, so anyway, let's get into this episode.
One thing to say real quick.
Go ahead.
Charlock said...
I saw this.
This amount, this hour... long two chapters.
Oh, Pearson, yeah.
Was actually 3.75 chapters. Okay. There's 5.5 chapters left. So the next one's going to be even longer for sure.
Yeah.
Unless a lot of condensing can happen. He said there's a spinoff manga called Attack on Titan Before the Fall that released from 2013 through 2019 with 17 volumes.
Okay, so there is kind of an extracurricular stuff.
So there's some stuff out there. And one of the things that we know in the show is actually a reference to the spinoff. It's about the iceberg crystals.
That's right.
That comes with it. Yeah.
Okay. So maybe we'll have to get into that. I know we have talked about maybe going through some of the manga on here on the show. I feel like that might actually be appropriate. Maybe, I know it's not animated, so we can do like a reaction, but maybe we could read some of it and sort of review and just
this.
Do a little spin-off.
What do you think of this?
we'll do the voiceovers, actually. We'll just like hold it up in front of the camera and be like, I can't speak Japanese, but you know what I mean. Okay.
Yeah, Before the Fall might get an anime in the future. See, there's dollars to be made on the franchise.
There absolutely is. It's a big show.
I wonder if they'll do like an OVA movie about Historia and tell us what happened. Because they'll I feel like that was just like a, hey, look over here, and we're never coming back to it.
If we don't get a whole romance about how that man won Historia's heart, I'm throwing fists, okay? Papa Brouse is going to come in there. He's going to be, how dare you?
A boot up somebody's booty hole.
You
break it off.
You need to date this woman and court her respectfully, okay?
I think Historia's stuff absolutely comes into play, which we'll get to that. We'll get to my theory about that in the show or as we go through the notes here. Okay. So, first scene of the show is something that Pete commented on that he didn't remember. So when we watch it for the reaction, this first bit happened so fast, I barely remembered it as well, but I was like, oh yeah, this happened. So Mikasa it's young Mikasa. She has the scarf. They don't fully show her face, but she's touching Eren's face and she says, I'll see you later, Eren. And at least in this bit, it looks like chronologically she's actually doing that, and then maybe that's actually the thing that wakes him up. It's not clear. That's sort of what it looks like.
My theory was she does that and then goes and does his job for him and then comes back and wakes him up. Because he's supposed to be gathering sticks.
So some time
that
elapses,
would make
yeah.
total sense.
But what, I also... Go ahead.
What didn't make sense to me is it's the first image we see of this. We've been waiting for, you know, a year now,
it
right?
brings everything back to the first episode. Yeah, it's like a full circle.
And the very first thing you see of this finale is you see a scene that you've never seen before where Mikasa touches Eren's face and says, what'd she say? I'll come back.
I'll see you later.
I'll see you later. Mm-hmm. I was like...
She's saying goodbye.
That's foreshadowing. Mm-hmm. She's going to kill him.
I think, and later on, of course, she says, Aaron's just gone. Like, she gets asked, like, are you going to kill? Annie asks her, are you going to kill Eren?
I'm going to bring him back.
She says, no, I couldn't do that. But Aaron's just gone somewhere, and I'm going to bring him back. And I'm like,
there's a tension that I'm excited about.
Exactly.
I
want to
see how that goes.
I agree. It's been building for a long time in season 4.
Is she going to bring him back by killing him? And in the last moments before he dies, then he's Eren again, and then he dies.
Oh, I mean, I think there's a legitimate question to be asked about what is death in this show now that we've seen what happens with Hanji.
True.
Very true.
Okay, so they replay the beginning scene. We see the tree, of course. So, we get the touching the face, and then it skips, there's a little black moment or whatever, it skips right over to the tree and Eren going, what am I doing here? I feel like I just had such a long dream. We've seen this scene now several times in the show. And he goes, what was I dreaming about? I can't remember. And then she says, Eren, why are you crying? And so I'm going to ask questions we've already asked about this scene that still don't seem like they're answered, though they are coming into focus a tiny bit, which is this Eren who's here now doesn't have any Titan powers. I'm just not really sure what it is that's happening in this scene.
I think he's seeing memories. He's seeing distant memories, but he doesn't have the power yet.
He doesn't have the power.
Just like Falco. saw the, remember, he gets blown up and he goes, whoa.
Yes. So you're hitting on my theory.
Flying
yes.
around on the thing.
I was
it's
going,
because
zoom,
he's
going
to get a
it's
Titan.
Because he's destined to have one.
But.
Because he's connected through the past.
Sorry, not Flock. Falco, as far as we know, gets the Jaw Titan, doesn't get the Attack Titan, which the Attack Titan, as far as we know, is the only one that gives you the future memories.
Right.
Unless Falco's going to get that Titan at some
yeah,
point.
Yeah, well, spoiler, but Falco does get some memories from the
no,
beast, remember?
No, I remember saying that beast. A long time before, is that he, it's, it might be because he has Zeke's spinal fluid in him, and that's why he has memories, because Zeke saw ODM
the,
gear.
The paths and stuff.
But I've wondered if maybe somehow Falco is going to end up with all the Titans at the end.
Falco is the chosen one?
I don't know.
Dang.
But it would explain why he's having future memories before he could have them.
Before he could have them.
Unless it's the spinal fluid or it's the paths.
But he didn't have spinal fluid at that time. When he's on the when Falco's on the ground in the beginning of season four and we see him and he's reaching
up. Yeah, he doesn't have any
He's the same
fluid
status
yet.
As Aaron. He's a kid with nothing. He's just a regular LD.
And the only
point.
Other kid we've seen do that is Aaron. And he gets the Attack Titan, which has the future memories. And so that's from then I was like, is he going to end up getting the Attack Titan?
That's what we were all thinking.
And at this point, we know the Attack Titan also has the Founding Titan and the
Warhammer
Titan. The Warhammer several Titans, so yeah
no seriously because again
and
I'm
the
skipping
way that the
here,
other like the way that Falco, Reiner and Pick love him, like if that was the answer to get them all into one person, they would choose him over anybody
for sure. Well, so whether or not he gets the powers, the flying thing, and now I'm seeing it, because remember even that first scene with Falco, he's seeing the birds and that, and he goes, they're flying around like whoosh or whatever.
Yeah,
I'm like, dude, he's the flying Titan. 100%
Yeah, okay. For sure.
But that, how fitting that Isayama's been hinting at birds this whole time, that the
series would end
freedom and the theme of like the birds can soar above the walls that are destined to keep them in.
Yeah.
Then we get like the image of the bird cage, you know, everyone's been trapped forever.
Yeah.
And Aaron now, even in this last episode, is talking about like, I just, beyond the walls wasn't what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
And I need to remake it. I need to change it, right?
Dude,
and then what if Falco, the bird, right? The symbol of freedom.
The symbol of freedom.
Is the one, the wings of freedom, right? He's the one who actually like eats them all and then ends it and brings freedom.
That'd be crazy.
Brings justice to the Force.
Dang, dude. I feel like that would be legit. I feel like that would be a nice like kind of...
It wouldn't make sense in any other thought process that we've had.
Yeah.
Because it's always been the trio. It's always been Mikasa, Armin, and Eren.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, no, they're the ones that are going to end this whole thing. Mikasa's going to kill Eren, or Eren's going to allow himself to be killed. But Armin is the one who has to like, kind of like convince everybody. He's the key to this. One thing that you kind of made clear for me that I've had some like thoughts about in the past is Armin is the real hero of the entire show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, he is the central character. I don't think, I mean, I realized it doing this podcast, but in season one in particular, the narrator, we didn't get a lot of narrating into season four with the new studio and stuff, but it's Armin's voice
on that day. You were all reminded, and that's Armin.
Yeah, and he's the one who's like telling the story, and so that's true all the way through the first three seasons. And the thing is that remember I made this comment with the first episode is to you in 2,000 years, right? It's like this letter, and I remember thinking, okay, so maybe is this Armin writing like a history, and that this show that we're watching is kind of like his recounting of what happened and his like you know. Or whatever.
But who's he recounting
I wonder if
to?
He'll start writing this letter in the plane on the way to fight Aaron.
Yeah. And so that's kind of my thought is like.
But how's the letter going to end?
Even now, well, I'm not sure how it's going to end, but even now, like what's transpiring and what Aaron's going for, and we kind of got a glimpse of it in this episode when Aaron speaks of like, oh, is this going to be enough to hold off the enemies of Eldia for, you know, at least a few decades or whatever. Well, what if it's enough to hold the enemies of Eldia for 2,000 years? You know, you see what I'm saying? Like, I feel like the 2,000 specifically
at this
that
point, with what Aaron has done so far, that's probably accurate.
Oh, I think that time frame.
I thought it was talking about Ymir. Ymir's been in the past for 2,000 years.
Oh, dang.
Because when the episode happens,
right.
That's when Aaron goes and says, like, you've been trapped here for forever.
2,000
like,
years.
You've been suffering in pain. Let me bring an end to your suffering.
Yeah. And then, okay, so what's the episode? It was at the end of season 4. We've already seen the episode. There's another episode that's titled, it's not to you in 2,000 years, but it's like from you in 2,000 years or whatever.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yes.
I thought that was the first, that was the episode when they go into the paths.
Yeah, I think it is. Okay, maybe you're right. So maybe that's the time frame he was talking about then.
I thought so.
Okay. Well, at any rate,
who
then,
knows?
The point is that there's clearly a connection between the paths and this moment here with Aaron, when he's having this dream.
Yes.
And that it shares similarities with whatever it is that Falco is going through and his connection to the past, and them all being Eldians. Because clearly it's not just having the Titan power that makes you sensitive to this stuff. There's mm-hmm. more to it than that. And so I do have to wonder too, this would be a little cheesy, so I'm assuming this didn't happen, but I actually wouldn't mind it if the dream that Aaron's like, oh, I can't remember, is actually everything we've just watched, and that what yeah. we're about to see is a different things play out differently.
Oh, so you that'd think that be, you think that crazy. He can't continue to see the future.
I'm saying everything we're watching right now was his original dream.
Yeah,
like an eighth grade and none of writing it's happened project yet.
Oh, you think the show's going to end with a time saying like, well, that was a crazy time dream loop. And none of it actually ever happened and it's going to happen? Or you're saying nothing happened at all?
I don't know. Maybe it's like, hey, Aaron's seen the future and he has to like change. He has to like change what he's going to do or something. I don't know.
Oh, that'd be interesting. I'd be down for that, I think.
I just had a question from the past. When Zeke's protege, whatever the heck, is Kruger? No. Not Kruger. What the heck was that guy's name?
Zeke's protege?
The his guy, teacher? Not protege.
His mentor? Oh, yeah. Yeah, Mr. His mentor.
What's his face?
The glasses.
The glasses. Didn't he mention that he was studying the past Titans for answers? Mm-hmm. How was he doing that?
He's going back into the memories.
Was he like looking back in memories from the past?
I don't think he could because he didn't have the attack Titan.
I know. That's what I'm wondering. Like,
he's not looking into the future. He's looking into the past. Everybody
they
who gets a Titan.
Look in the past, right?
Yeah, everybody gets a Titan and inherits memories from that. From that Titan. Yeah, from that Titan. So yes. That's what he's saying. He was looking back into previous generations.
So he was, okay.
Because he had the Beast or whatever before.
Yeah. But also, it seemed like Aaron really couldn't look at that much of the past until he touched
Historia.
And
her royal blood.
Because remember, when he got the injection, it made him forget a bunch of stuff. And his dad even says you're going to forget a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, everybody has some. Like,
and even when he eats the Titan, he's not clear on the past. He has to like slowly like remember it.
Yeah.
As time goes on.
He starts to remember it naturally as he exercises the power. Because once he figures out he has power for the first time, he starts transforming. That's when that stuff starts. Just remember the things his dad said to him and whatever, like also starts to come back.
So perhaps that everybody will have that happen naturally where they'll be able to remember their original stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the reason that Zeke could do it so well is he's actually from royal blood. That's why he had all these crazy powers and was able to like speak while he's a Titan.
Yeah. No question in my mind.
Wouldn't it be crazy if Falco somehow ends up being of royal blood and we just like didn't know it?
I mean, I think it's a kind of a guarantee at this point. Somebody else does. We don't know who, but somebody else has got royal blood around somewhere. It's gotta be.
He freezes when he takes, because he's Eldian though.
I'm just wondering, because Falco seems to be able to control his Titan really well already.
Okay. So inheriting a Titan power from a family member, you can more easily recall their memories. I remember them talking about that.
Yeah, they kind of do mention that. I think we get some of that in season 3, even when we start to get more, when we are first really introduced to the Rice family and them passing it on. We witness that for the first time. You start to realize it's both the fact that you're trained and how to do your Titan powers, and that you understand what they are, and that they even exist.
You've been studying your whole life.
And the fact that you're getting them from your father, you sort of like understand, oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, brother or sister or whatever.
Three things I wanted to point out before we leave them is that there's some unanswered questions, but there's some themes. We have Levi, and we have Zeke.
Mm-hmm.
That arc needs an ending.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
And so they're going to have one final fight.
They're going to do get out.
Zeke is finally going to get killed by Levi. But Dude Gold said, what about a Ackerman Titan? What if the way that Levi ends up killing Zeke is he actually gets the injection and then eats Zeke and then inherits that Titan power or whatever?
That'd be crazy.
I think that, I mean,
I would love for him to get his fingers back. I'd love for him to have that. That'd be freaking amazing.
I think he's like, I've got one thing left in me to kill Zeke and then I'm dead.
I feel like he's going to take Zeke out and then just mysteriously die, like, because he's basically just living on pure willpower at this point.
Yeah, he's a warrior.
He wants to join.
There's no place for him after the war.
I feel like Levi has to die. For lots of reasons. But he wants to join now. Hanjay.
Everybody he loves is in Valhalla right now, he wants to go join Erwin and all the freaking.
But he wants to fulfill his purpose. I think he now understands that.
He says, "Watch us now. Like, I'm going to go fulfill my purpose, and that's to kill the Beast Titan." And I was. The last thing Erwin told me to do was go kill this guy, and I'm going to freaking do it. And then I can die.
Yeah.
Then his willpower, everything you're holding on to keep yourself alive, then you can relax and you're going to just pass on. So I think that's how that ends. The other thing is Falco, he's going to fly in. There's something there. And maybe that could be getting all the Titan powers. Or we have Mikasa and Armin and Eren that have to have a conclusion. I think Mikasa is going to use that scarf. That's the thing that's going to break.
I think she's
going to break
him with that scarf.
Well, I think she's going to break him. I think she's going to say, like, remember this. You told me you were always going to put this on. And that's going to stop him from being, like, the big bad guy that he's trying to put on. And he's going to be like, I'm doing this because I love you. And I want to save you. And I wanted to be with you. I see you as more than a friend. And
then, finally. You know, for all the time.
And then they'll die.
Confess your love.
And then he's going to, like, lower his guard, kiss her, and then she's going to kill him. And he's going to be like, good. And then it's going to explode or something like that. Or maybe the hardening happens and they all are hardened together and the end is come or something like that. I'm not sure exactly how that's going to play out. But all the nine Titan powers have to be killed at the same time.
Yeah.
They can't keep going on.
Yeah.
It's just more, the story won't be over.
Yeah. We were saying this before the show. I'm just going to insert this here because we're so far off topic. Anyway,
I know, we have wandered all around in the weeds.
There's so much to discuss here.
We're in the weeds.
So one of them is Eren... I was saying this before, and I think I may have mentioned this on the podcast before, but it seems to me that Eren, so we get the information the Attack Titan has the unique power to see certain memories.
Future memories
of the next person who, maintains the Attack Titan power. So that explains, explains the owl and Grisha, and then Grisha on with Eren and so on and so forth. They kind of have this understanding, this future memory thing that starts to happen to them. And then with Eren, at least so far as he's told us, he doesn't see another holder of the Titan. He sees his own future.
Yes.
Because of this kind of loop that happens when he touches Historia and the two powers are activated and so on. And then once again, when he's with Zeke and he touches him, we see this, like I said, kind of loop thing happening because these two powers are interacting. But I think that means Eren is the last, at least as far as the Attack Titan is concerned, he's the last one to hold it because there's not another one who's got the power.
What would
I think it's just
nuts
him.
Is like if right now somebody on the ship, Mikasa or Levi or Connie, starts having future memories. Then we go,
oh my gosh,
it's him, whatever.
Yeah,
dang.
But we haven't seen that, so I'm guessing, it's the grand finale. It's going to be put to an end.
Something has to come to an end.
It has to be closure.
Okay.
Moving on.
So the show. So back to our, we get to the kids. We get to the immigrant kids, and they're like stashing stuff away.
They're dreaming about being rich in the future.
Yeah, and
one guy's got his arm cut off already because he got caught
his
stealing.
His hand,
which Ramsay's we've already, is the one we already saw, right?
Ramsay and Halil.
Yeah, and he's the one who... Okay, so it's... I can't... Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we've actually seen... No. Yeah, just Ramses. He's the one who...
Well, we saw their whole village, remember? Because Eren and the rest of them get brought to the village.
So maybe we saw both of them.
We didn't realize the reason that Eren and the rest of them get brought to the village is because Eren saves him in the city.
Oh, yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's how that...
Okay, well, the reason I'm saying this is because in the show...
There's a dot connection.
There is two immigrant kids altogether then, because one of them is the one that Eren saves from the fight from the men who are beating him in the alley because he's a pickpocket. The other one is the kid that Levi actually saves when they arrive on the boat and they're going to persecute him. And there's a bunch of, it's for similar scenario, but it's the whole town's going to gather like, oh, this kid. Because remember, he took he took somebody's coin purse.
Yeah.
And they caught him. And then they were like, oh, he's my little brother.
They're
going to
cut his hand off.
Yeah, they're going to cut his hand off. And then Levi.
Same kid.
Levi, yeah, it is. Okay, it's all.
Is it Ramses again, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But remember, they like take him to safety. The group does with Levi, and then the kid takes off. And then they're stumbling in the village. Anyway, point is that for sure, Ramses, we've already known, and he does have a hand or a finger or whatever missing now at this point.
His hand.
Yeah, his
hand.
Whole hand. It's like bandaged up. He's just got a stub.
And so he's been.
And they're hiding the money that he stole that caused him to lose that hand.
Yeah. And so they're kind of like. Refugees, remember they were in like a refugee camp. That was like the whole idea. And so they like steal this stuff and they have this little conversation. And then he says, you hide this someplace nice. And he's like, you can't keep stealing basically because you're going to lose your hand. And it's going to make grandpa really sad, which I think grandpa must've been the old guy who was like, nice to meet you. Remember?
Yeah, I think so.
With the alcohol?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That must be grandpa. There's gotta be. Anyway, the part I want to get to is that the kid... knows he's a thief and knows that there's risks, and but he's like, I'm doing it for the family, I'm doing it for all of us, you know, so we can like have our own stuff one day. And he says this line that caught me. He says, somebody had to do it. And he's like, we have to do it for our family's sake, because otherwise they won't survive the winter. And so what's about to happen is the Roman's going to come through and kill them. But it's just interesting, because I'm like, dude, this little kid is actually using the exact same logic that Aaron's using as the rumbling's about to come and kill him. Is this little kid is going, well, okay, I know I'm not supposed to do this. I know it's not right, and it's risky, and it's just, you know, there's destructive parts to this.
And it could cost me something. It could cost me my arm.
Yeah, it could cost me a lot in the thieving. But because I care so much about my family, I care about these other people, somebody's got to do the violent thing, the bad thing, for the good of everyone else. And then he turns, and then the rumblings happen. That's Aaron going, I'm going to do the bad thing because somebody's got to do it. And I feel like it's the same logic.
It kind of shows
and
you
then
that
we kind of go through this whole montage of memories of Aaron and the kid, and
kind of shows you the spectrum of gray, of like what's good and what's bad, and is it good to save your family? Yeah. At what cost does it stop being good to save your family if you're going to kill more people to do it?
Yeah.
And at what cost is it? Do you lose yourself trying to save everybody? If you become a monster to do it, right? And that was that quote from when they're on the horseback. You have to become the monster.
Yes. In order to
somebody overcome has to be willing the monster, someone has to be willing to become a monster.
Something like that. Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And so there's kind of like this theme there where it's like there's a kernel of truth in someone's got to be willing to do the hard things to save everybody. But how many other people are you willing to sacrifice? It's noble when you're sacrificing yourself to save everybody. It's not noble when you're sacrificing other people to save other people. And at what point, like, you have these scenarios, like the needs of the few versus the needs of the many. And is it noble to sacrifice the needs of the few to save the needs of the many?
Yeah.
And what do you have to do? But at what point does it stop being noble if these people don't want to be sacrificed and you're just going to force them? Like, don't we call that tyranny?
Yeah. Dude, this entire show is one, like, moral philosophy experiment. Yeah.
It's true.
Because, like, on a note, I mean, this is something I heard yesterday. It was unrelated, but now I'm realizing it's kind of connected. There's somebody saying, you know, it's righteous to do charity, to do giving, and to give of yourself and to sacrifice of yourself on behalf for the interest of other people, family or church, right, or whoever that may be. That's true virtue. It's wicked to tell someone else to make the sacrifice, or to force someone else to make a sacrifice so that something good may come.
Right.
Because now it's not you. You're not the one making the sacrifice. You're now forcing it on someone else. And so, like, you know, in the grand scheme of things, you go, oh, well, sacrifice is being made for some virtuous reason. But the thing is who the will, the intent is actually what matters. That's what makes virtue. Virtue is actually not something that you can... like, it's something you can only possess in and of yourself, and only you can do. Only you as an individual can practice virtue. As a society, we can do virtuous things together, but really when it comes down to it, virtue is something that's only practiced by an individual. So, okay, this is really complicated, but to simplify it, if I have $100 in the bank and somebody's in need of money, and I give them the $100, I have now done an act of charity, okay? But if I see someone needs $100, I'm like, I'll bet Pete has $100. I'm like, give him the $100. I hold a gun to your head and make you give him the $100.
Right.
There was no charity. The person, you could still, the argument is, oh, well, the person still got helped, didn't they? So it must justify the act. But the thing is, it's not virtue.
Yeah.
It's just, that's the whole point. Anyway.
Yeah. Do the ends justify the means, even at the end of a gun barrel?
Yeah.
There's some really interesting points. There's a show that we used to watch all the time called The 100.
Yeah.
That started off amazing.
It
I don't know
what
it is.
And turned into a teen drama. It's really sad, but in that show, the beginning of it is Earth got radiated with war and all this stuff, and maybe global warming or whatever. And so, because
it's a post-apocalyptic society, basically,
everyone had to leave the Earth and get into a spaceship and basically exodus the Earth. And so, people were flying around the spaceship. There was no other livable land, but they were able to live in this spaceship, massive city-style spaceship. And I don't know. I forget how many.
I think it's like 100 years or something.
100 years, yeah. Yeah, and so like 500,000 people live for 100 years in a spaceship or whatever. I don't actually know how many. But the whole idea is like air's limited, food's limited. We can't have criminals. If you're a criminal, they immediately just airlock you. They just jettison you, right?
Dang.
Because we can't afford criminals, right? We can't afford crime. The stakes are way too high for everybody. If too many people mess up, everyone is going to die and our society dies out forever, right?
Yeah.
And so part of it, I'm like, oh, dang. That's a way to get everybody to be on the same page as you, right? But and one thing happens where they realize they're not going to have enough food or enough air, and so they
have
to...
space station starts breaking down because it wasn't designed to go for so long with so many people.
So at one point they have to say, "Listen, we're all going to die and starve, or I forget, 150 people have to volunteer to die to save everybody else." A culling.
150 out of 500,000.
I feel like it was 350 people. It was a bigger. It was a pretty. It was like a third of the people.
Okay,
so maybe it was a huge number of people.
But the whole idea is
they forced everyone to do a lottery.
Yes, and the people who got it had to go do it.
They had no choice.
But then later on, there's a leader who's like, "We're never doing that again," and he volunteers later on to like sacrifice himself. And I was like, this is the difference. You put a gun in someone's head and say, "We have to do this for the good of humanity." Like, you never want to do that, right?
Yeah.
But then at the same time, there's like a beauty that happened where all the older people were like, I'm going to go lay my life down. And the leaders were like, "We're not going to be the ones forcing people to die, but for the good of humanity, we will lay our lives down and we will die." And there's like a beauty that happened because of this wicked thing that happened in the past that everyone was so like pushing against. And so, you know, when you see a scenario like this, it really makes you think of like, wow, at what point do these things become real and break down? And at what point is do the ends justify the means? And what's righteousness? What's virtue? And that's why I love good art, is because it really makes you think about these deep questions and about what's right at the end. Like, think about even in this scene here, right? The rumbling starting, all these people are fleeing the city. People, when it's your life on the line and adrenaline hits, fight or flight, you don't think like, I wonder if the grandma over there, like, "Oh, I gotta save myself," right? And you're pushing people out of the way. And we have,
you see in this whole,
the guy
thing
getting ripped out of the car.
Yes.
And there's people getting trampled.
People pushing each other into a train. And
every man for yourself, because all you're trying to think about is survive. You have like this instinct in you to survive.
Yeah.
Even at the cost of other people. After that day ends, you're going to be like, "Oh, I made it." And you're going to think back, "I shoved somebody out of the way to get here."
Yeah.
And that's kind of what Irvin addresses, right? That's why Irvin's a great leader, is he goes, you know, how many people sacrificed their lives so we could be here now?
Yeah.
What are we going to do with that? We're alive and they're not. And how are we going to live to be able to like, they're watching us right now, and we need to live in a way that, in a manner that justifies us being alive.
Witness me.
Yes.
So this scene kind of, well, it doesn't end, but it's the little break that they have there is like the kids, you know, feel the rumbling and they look up and they see all the people running and they see this is such a potent scene, because especially now it's been, like however long it's been since the end of season 4, part 2. And it's like a reminder, like, "Hey, remember we showed you the rumbling and the ships shooting at the Titans and they couldn't really do much, whatever? Yeah, just so you remember that, check this out." And it, like, it's because the kids are up on like a mountainside overlooking the city or whatnot, and they see all the freaking Titans.
They see the giant steaming meat mountains coming towards them.
And I actually, the meat,
I hate
mountains,
when I see that.
Oh, dude, that's the meat, the mountains are the worst.
Or is that a dream? beef.
Oh, no.
Diamond steam meat mountains.
Are we going to start a restaurant now?
Come on down to Giant Steven
Meat Mountains. They will destroy the earth, but they will be delicious.
They will flatten your hunger.
So hot, it's going to be a big Cajun thing. Hunger. Like, so hot, perfect. It'll burn your city down.
There will be a rumbling in your stomach.
Okay. See, I'm telling you, brands. Brands got to take advantage of anime.
Put an end to the rumbling in your tummy.
That's right. We'll commit genocide on that hunger.
On your behalf. So, but the perspective they give here is so perfect, and it's so potent, in part because they don't play, I don't know if you notice this, they don't play any music through this. They let the kids do their thing, and then they just let the rumbling sound and the sound of the birds and like whatever, and they kind of zoom further and further in, and then they just land on a steady shot of the Titans just like marching, and they're kind of weird,
but
small
then,
heads,
then the
faces.
Music is picking up.
Yeah, and then like they put the whatever on the screen. And then they start things going, and you're like, "Oh my gosh,
the
dude."
The thing that did it for me
was pretty powerful.
You know, the city's getting crushed. So all the townspeople are like up in the mountains, and this is like the hiding space of the refugees.
He's
right?
Also telling you here, Isayama is also telling you that he's not like other people in other shows. They stop before the world's actually destroyed in this show. It's happening, okay? Right. You may think, the hero's going to come and swoop in and stop the rumbling. Like, no. These people are dying right now.
I like that he's like, there's consequences to actions.
Yes.
But everyone's running out, and everyone's like, "Get up to the mountains, get up to the mountains." And then you turn and they see there's Titans on the mountains too. And yeah. you realize there's nowhere to run.
They're just everywhere. And they're like, if one misses something, the one behind it gets it. Like they're just trampling everything. And if they don't trample it, it just bursts into flames.
Plus they can do some sick and mountain slides down there.
There's people just like burning, just standing there screaming because of the heat. Before they get crushed.
It's a very good way of like communicating how the feeling of like hopelessness,
yeah,
of dread, fear, we're all gonna die and there's nothing you can do.
I think the most one of the most potent parts was when you see Aaron's grandparents mm-hmm. and they feel it, and his grandma says, are we finally paying for all of our sins?
Yeah, has our judgment come? Day, yeah,
has
come
judgment day finally come? And I'm like, you heartless bastard, you're crushing your own grandparents. What did they ever do to you?
I mean, they're kind of jacked up.
They didn't even know that you existed.
They didn't read his book. They lectured him about his
Zeke, they knew, but they didn't know Aaron, you know?
Oh, yeah. You're right. Sorry. Yeah.
They didn't even know he existed because they thought Grisha was dead. But anyway.
So it pauses right there once after the mountains thing. And then it actually flashes back to this. We get a few of these in this episode, or it goes back to Aaron. And first of all, they show the statue of Helios twice in this show. And this time it's you know, flashback. It's like a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And then he says, in the future, I massacre all of these people. They all die. No, I kill them.
Yeah. I like how he changes. He goes, all these people are going to die. No, they're not just going to die randomly. I'm going to kill them. He's like trying to put himself in the feeling of taking responsibility for what he's about to do. Does he have the stomach to do it? Is he going to do it?
He's counting the cost.
Yeah.
One of the shots we see during the rumbling is all the birds flying away. And it's a very ominous thing. If you ever see that in real life, dude.
You're going to die. Running,
well, okay, so when the fires were happening.
Yeah, we saw some of that.
We had some
here.
Really crazy fires happen that came very close to us. The sky was dark red.
There was
and black.
Like animals that you don't
animals
normally
were
see.
Running into the city and birds were flying. And like, I was trying to get home from work and we were just looking at these birds flying over. We're like,
Oregon's a bad place for there to be fires because there's so many trees.
There's
so
a
much
lot
growth
of
and,
fuel.
Yeah, tons.
But it made you feel like apocalypse. It made you feel like judgment's here at the end.
I remember driving to front because at the time I was north of here. And so like driving home from where it wasn't as bad. And I was just driving towards the Black Death is what it looked like. Yeah. Every day for weeks.
So there's a line that Aaron says here. Where he says it's I kill them. It's already determined that that's what I do. It must be that no one found a way to save paradise. And no one survives basically. Okay, so he gives this line. This could open up a giant can of worms for me because I have a lot to say about determinism. I just want to give like a 2 second thing on this really quick. So determinism, philosophical term, and there's kind of two basic paths on this idea, which determinism is that everything's determined. It comes from what they call like a materialistic type of view, which some people ascribe to, which is there is no spiritual, there's no supernatural, there's no realm of the soul or anything like that, or angels, demons. The only thing that exists is the physical, right? So it's just the physical world that we live in. And with that as your basis, and then you have, scientific observation, and you go, okay, well, with scientific observation, if I have enough information, I can actually predict where things are going
to
go.
I can read the algorithm, so to speak. I can see how the future is going to work.
I always use the example of like the moon or even some of the stars. I can tell you with great precision exactly where the moon is going to be, even like, 50 years from now, because the Earth follows this consistent pattern and the moon follows this consistent pattern. They travel at a certain speed and through space and so on and so forth. And so with enough information, if you know what all of the acting forces are, then you can then sort of predict where the moon is going to be. And you could say that that is a form of determinism. That's something that is a determined event. Like it's going to happen that the moon is going to be in this position. Now, I might need more information. I may not have it, but suppose I did. Suppose I could see a comet that was like, 1,000 light years away right now, but it's actually on its way and it's going to take out the moon at some point. Again, if I had that information, not only could I predict where the moon was going to be in 50 years, but in 51 years, I could tell you it's not going to exist. It's going to get blown up. But it was all a matter of like, okay, if you can understand all these things, now you can actually see where
how much information you can have. If you had all the information, you could be able to predict exactly how things
are going to
go.
Yeah, and the reason that that's important is because the reason it's important to quote have the information is because if you did have the information, you'd understand that everything, the forces that are enacting the universe are already acting, and that there is no there's no alternative. So determinism is the fact is that things are determined. There's different versions of this. Yeah, there's the religious version, which is that, you know, there's a God and he's the one who scripted everything, and that he, you know, or God or gods or whatever, and that they've, you know, they've written the events that are going to happen, which include the activity of man and so on and so forth. And so there is no breaking from that. Everyone's destiny, including the words I'm saying to you right now. There's no such thing as a free will or an act of will or anything like that. So it looks like there is, but it's just an illusion. Okay. So that's kind of like, that's your, materialistic determinism is, you know, the same thing. Like everything's determined, but not because a God did set it into play, but just because that's how the universe is. And so we have the illusion to ourselves that maybe there's a free will. It's just the same thing. It's like a free will's an illusion. And also God's an illusion. Things just are the way they are because they are. There's no why behind it. It just is what it is. So then on the flip side of that, you have free will, and free will would say free will takes on a lot more nuance. It's kind of like position I tend to fall in, which is that limited free will is what I believe in. It's like, okay, yes, you express your free will. Humans actually do have a capacity. So there is, we're not just material. Like we're more than that. We're a soul. We're a spirit. There's, you know, other stuff going on. We're not just a physical body. Mm-hmm. And in part because of that, we also, as humans, express this idea of free will. And we have free wills interacting with each other. And yet, there are also things that are obviously determined, like the position of the moon. And when I always talk about this, like you're not always going to exercise your free will. Like the light turns green. You've been driving for 20 years. You just put your foot on the gas. I don't know if you used your free will there, but could you call it determinism? I don't know. Basically, there's some gray areas. And so this is super interesting because this specific point, Aaron says, it's already determined that that's what I do. It's so interesting. Lots of media has dealt with this. Minority Report is the one that came to my mind. I just saw it the most recently. It's the same freaking thing. He sees his own future. But the precog, if you haven't seen the movie, you have like 20
years.
But one of the precogs that he like abducts or whatever is with him. She's like, she tells him, you know, what's going to happen. And she actually says, you can choose. Like you could choose differently. You can change the outcome. Now that you know what your future is, like you could choose differently. And I feel like this show is actually trying to deal with that exact same thing in a way. But Aaron doesn't seem to think so. Aaron just goes, this is what happens.
No choice.
I see the future.
I'm a slave to my destiny.
It's all determined. I have to do this.
So this is something that I like. Hate about determinism. People get into these modes where they just go, what's the point?
I'm just an automaton. I'll do whatever I'm programmed to
do. Now, whether you believe, you know, it's God that's orienting all of this the way it is, or whether you believe that nature is just the way it is and you can't change anything,
mm-hmm.
It's depressing to me.
Yeah,
because things are the way they are and you can't change that. So therefore, in this, Aaron gets in this. He sees a kid getting beaten up.
Yeah.
And he goes, oh,
why bother?
He's going to die anyway.
Well, he starts to go help him, and then the guy was like, this isn't your problem.
And he goes, oh, that's true.
You're right. It's not my problem. And he walks away.
Yeah.
And so this, I feel like, is a direct fruit when you have like this fatalistic determinist view, like, what's the point anyways, right?
Yeah.
And this is the opposite of what both Mikasa and Hanjay both say in this episode.
Yeah, that's right. Hanjay's like, oh, I wish I could have shown him a better future. That's
Mikasa
funny.
Says, we have to do the things we can do. Yeah. And I'm like, let's go, Mikasa! Right?
Yeah.
And later on in chapter 2, they're going to talk about that more so. But Hanjay also says, like, I have to go do what I can do. Like, she agrees with
is it Flock or whatever?
Elena.
Yelena. She agrees with Yelena.
Yeah.
Which is something I don't recommend. I
yeah, she's not someone you want to agree
but
with often.
She agrees to an extent. She's like, you're right. I couldn't show Aaron a better way. She's not agreeing that Zeke's plan was the best plan. She's agreeing that she couldn't show him a better plan.
Yeah.
And then what does she say right there? She says, like, I forget what she says. We'll get to it in my notes. But she says basically something along the lines of, like, well, I've got to go try to stop him anyways.
Yeah.
And so
I'm still going to do what I can.
She's going to say, maybe it's all written. Maybe we made a mistake or whatever, but I can't change the past. All I can do is try to affect the future and keep moving forward.
Yeah. Maybe it's not written
in a righteous way.
Maybe,
right?
Maybe it isn't determined. Maybe I can have an effect here.
Yeah. So I think you see the two different kind of worldviews. Aaron's like, I've seen the future already. It's written. I can't do anything. And I have to kind of do this anyways. I'm going to kill all these people. So he leaves this kid to kind of be beaten up for a second. He starts to stop and he goes,
yeah, he has this little argument with himself here. Yeah.
He goes, what's the point in trying to be a, Right before this, by the way, he says all these people, all their homes, all their dreams, and he sees a pregnant lady, and it's like the saddest thing. She's walking along. He goes, they're all going to die. What would my mom think?
Yeah.
And then he thinks back, and he says, shouldn't the Eldians be the one to die? And he thinks about the king. And
what's her name? Frida or whatever.
Frida, yeah. And he realizes that's why they had programmed that so hard into the royal blood, was because here we have the opposite. The one choice was stay docile, let the world just do whatever it's going to do. Better that the Eldians themselves live in under tyranny and ultimately maybe die than the entire world dying. Or the flip side is, which we didn't think that it had to be like this, but Aaron now is on the flip side. He's going to kill everyone to protect the people on the island. And so the needs of the few versus the needs of the many.
Yeah.
And he goes, it's the same way that the King of the Walls chose humanity's downfall. I just can't accept things are going to end that way. He goes, should the Eldians be the ones to die? No, I just can't accept that. I can't accept that my friends are going to die, my loved ones are going to die, that we fought for nothing. No, I can't accept that. So he's like, he's convincing himself he's still going to kill all the people that are here.
Except he's killing Eldians with other people.
He knows that.
And
I know.
He's just decided he still thinks that's chill.
He doesn't care about all Eldians. He cares about
Paris Islands.
Technically,
the ones
he warned them.
He didn't really warn them. Okay.
In the vision
if
thing,
I'm like, I'm going to hit you. That's not a warning. Okay.
Fair point.
That's what he basically did. He's like, the rumbling is coming. You're all going to die.
Yeah, I guess if he would have given him time
like
to get to the island or something.
A couple days.
Remember in part two, you do see that the... I don't know if this is 100% yet. Specifically the ones who escaped. Remember the Reiner's parents, all the parents of the warriors and stuff like that? We see them all gathered. They got on the train. They hijacked the train and made it out to Fort Salta.
Because of that warning.
Because of the warning.
But they didn't go to the island.
Right. I don't know if they could have gotten to
the island. They went deeper inland. Are they stupid?
And then
what's
Aaron
wrong
kills all the airships, so it's not like he could fly to the island anyway.
Yeah.
So.
I don't know.
He makes it impossible
he does.
For anybody to get to safety. He's because like, even if they had jumped on boats, the ocean would have boiled them all to death.
He's like, I have to, you know, here, according to this law, in order to be fair, I have to give him a warning. Hey, you're all going to die. Okay, warning checked off. Like, he doesn't care.
It's a formality for him.
I think that is what pissed me off the most about what Aaron has done, is that he tells all the Eldians in the world that he's going to do the rumbling and flatten the world, and that he's only going to save the people on this island.
Yeah, maybe.
And he doesn't give any of the people that he warns any time to get to the island where they'd be safe. It's bullcrap.
Yeah. So Aaron says, I most likely save this kid in the future, right? And this is something he can't necessarily see. But then he goes, what am I doing acting like some kind of righteous person? I've committed horrible acts of violence. Eventually, I'll kill this kid too. And he stops and he goes, oh, you're right. Starts to walk away. Then he begins to think and he goes, man, I'm the same as you, Reiner. And this is a perfect example of the thought process that gets him to when he invades
Liberio.
Liberio, thank you. He shows up. He's got his arm cut off and his leg cut off, and he goes, "I'm the same as you, Reiner." You know, and you're like, "What the heck? What do you mean?"
And he tricks Falco into delivering messages and stuff.
And so he's the same as him, as in like he wants to do something and he has to fight against himself to do it. And in this one sense, he's the same in many ways. But then he says, "I'm a half-ass piece of shit. I'm worse than that." And then you see him. He did save the kid. He did go back. And so there's something.
He's got an argument.
Struggle.
He's having an argument.
He lets the kid
himself get
beat up for a little bit longer before he saves him. And then he's just like weeping and saying all this stuff. That poor child doesn't know what in the F he's talking about at all.
He grabs the kid.
He's just bawling.
And he says, I'm sorry.
So many times.
I'm sorry.
So many times he says, I'm sorry.
Yeah. I've been meaning to bring
that reminds me of every horrible monster who beats their spouse, male or female. And then
it's like, look what you made me do.
Like their face is all bloody and they're bleeding out of their mouth. And they're like, I'm so sorry that you made me have to do this to you. I'm sorry. That's what that reminded
me
of. It was the same posture, the way he was saying, I'm sorry. I just can't help myself. It was that kind of feeling.
Yeah. He's Taylor Swift. Look what you made me do.
It's the same thing too. Like he's saying, I'm sorry. It's like, you haven't done it yet. Don't apologize for something that you're going to choose to do.
Yeah.
If you're really sorry, are you going to still do it? Would you still do it? Like, if you keep doing it, are you really sorry? Someone keeps coming back to you. Oh, I'm sorry. I hit you again. I hit you again. No. Sorry means you didn't want to do it and you won't do it in the future.
So, yeah. Sorry is like an unintentional thing.
It's to turn, right? It's repent, to turn away.
And then
from,
you learn from your horrible mistake and don't do that anymore.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think... your heart could be in the right place and you could say, I'm a drug addict and I'm sorry that I fell again. And I hope that I don't do it in the future, but I'm not strong enough. But at that point, you really got to be hitting rock bottom and you got to reach out to take every necessary step, you know, resist even the bloodshed to like not get back into that sin that's like holding you down.
What's the story? I think it was a movie. It was like based on a true story of like a mobster who goes and confesses to a priest or whatever about a mob hit job or whatever that hasn't happened yet. Like he's like repenting like ahead of time. He knows he's gonna go do it. And he's like telling the Catholic father guy. Like there's a movie about it, but I thought it was based on a true story.
I know what movie. I can't remember the name of it.
So we flash back to the rumbling, and all the townspeople are running, and they say, "Do the Marleyans flee without telling us? We're all gonna die." And then they're thinking, let's save the kids. How can we save the kids? And then you see,
these two kids,
Halil, I think it is
Halil and Ramses.
And
he says, "Don't give up." And he has a look in his eye that reminds me of Aaron. He has like a freaking unbeatable will, indomitable will. He's like, "We gotta try."
And he like
gotta try.
They like clutch the little money bag that they have, and like, we're gonna make a way for our family. Like they're still committed to the future.
So then we flash back to Aaron. Aaron says, to save the island, to save Eldia, but there's more to this. And he's crying, and he's talking to this kid who probably wouldn't understand him anyway.
Ramses is just like,
and you're talking about? Probably doesn't understand the language, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But Aaron needs a confession, man. It's the perfect confession, man, to deal with the stuff in his soul. And he says something that really gives us a clear view of like where Aaron's head at.
Oh, yeah. This is a great line.
He says, the reality of the world outside the walls was different than the one that I was dreaming of. And you have to look back. Let's look back to season one, Aaron. He's in the walls, and there's tyranny, and there's oppression, there's caste systems, and there's like the fear and the dread of the Titans always lumbering over them. And from his perspective, it's just so oppressive. He feels the weight of all of the walls upon his shoulders. Mm-hmm. Now, you go to a different perspective. You go to, what's his name? Hannes, right?
Yeah.
The blonde,
The blonde guy, the garden,
It was the good old days,
yeah.
Peace, they're getting drunk, they're having fun, right? It wasn't, he didn't feel the weight of the walls, but to a kid like Aaron, he feels the weight of the walls, he can't get out, he's trapped. And this is actually something that happens to some people who are born on an island. There's a thing that happens to them. It's not called landlocked, what is it called? Island sickness, island fever.
It's news to me,
probably island fever.
I mean, it sounds right,
where. Where they just freak out because there's nowhere for them to go. And they're just like, I have to get off.
They made a whole movie about it. It was called Moana. I'm just kidding.
but there's only so far for them to go and they just feel trapped. It's like an internal claustrophobia. And they end up like wanting to go to like a mainland. And so this kid I knew, he came to America. He was from, he's from Hawaii. And he's like, I had to get off. Like I had to get somewhere where I couldn't just go to the, I needed to go somewhere to the edge, bigger than me, right? So Aaron feels this like impressing weight of the fact that he's not free to do whatever he wants. He desires freedom so much in his heart and soul. All he wants to do, the thing that's keeping him alive, is Armin's book. And Armin's book is telling him, out there, beyond the walls, there's a blank slate. Beyond the walls, there's
he imagines there's no humans at all.
There's lands of ice.
Sandy snowfields? Something like
that. Sandy snowfields. There's
fiery lakes,
right? There's all these different things. And if we could just get beyond the walls, if all we could do is just, you know, get past these walls, get past the Titans that oppress us or whatever, we could, humanity can finally be free. We could explore, we could breathe the canvas, we could paint all the beautiful things. And he's such an idealistic kid. That is the power source that Aaron has been clutching to his heart. That's been keeping him going all this years. And when people have severe trauma like Aaron, he sees his mom gets eaten, his dad left, he doesn't know where his dad is, his friends are getting killed, his village gets smashed in, incredible trauma.
Yeah.
Everyone else is screaming, crying, and Aaron goes, he grabs that power source and he goes, one day I'm going to get there, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to kill all these Titans and I'm going to get to where the beautiful, and him and Armin, they're talking about it. This is their hope. This is where their feet are firmly planted. This is going to be their salvation, right? And eventually, you remember in season 3, is it that they get to the seashore?
Yeah, the end of season 3.
The end of season 3. They finally get out, and the Titans are not a problem, and they get to the seashore, and then Aaron realizes it's not a blank slate.
Yeah.
It's not a happy place where they can build a new future.
When he points across the ocean, and is like, is my enemy out there or whatever?
If I kill everyone there, then will I finally get the reality that I've been hoping for, the dream that I've been hoping for? And his expectation is so set. This is kind of a dangerous thing about hoping for something. Is if it doesn't happen the way you want, you can be utterly crushed. And so managing expectations is like a real part of like adulthood and humanity.
It's true.
Because if like, you know, you build up, I don't know, I do this all the time as a kid. Christmas is going to be so great, you know?
So true.
Oh, and then all you get is like some socks and underwear and a sweater and you're like,
ah. Well, even if you got some good things, if you didn't get exactly what you wanted.
I wanted a new bike.
You're just so let down and disappointed. And you don't want to be.
Yeah.
But your expectations were so high. And so Aaron had this expectation that beyond the walls, beyond the Titans, there was going to be hope and peace and joy
and wonder.
And wonder. And they're going to be able to explore and paint on this blank canvas. But when he went over the walls, he found a canvas already painted on with hatred, with racism,
with wickedness.
And he realized the world on the outside was not the world he was hoping for.
Yeah.
What does he do at this point? I'll tell you exactly what he does. He says, the reality of the world outside the walls was different than the one we had dreamed of. I saw a different world than the one in Armin's book. I learned that there was humanity outside the walls, and I was disappointed. I wanted this, is what he's saying as he's envisioning the rumbling happen. I wanted to wipe everything away. He sees the nasty tapestry of the sin-laden humanity, and he goes, oh, okay, I guess this is how... No, he goes, no, it can't be like this. The one thing keeping me going cannot be like this. I can't expose the people on the island to this, my loved ones, so what's he going to do? He's going to wipe all of that away and build a brand new humanity.
Did that outro to season 4 where it's like him running the field and like it's like flowers where you're growing? You actually said this.
Yeah.
You're like, I wonder if that's like after the rumbling. I'm like, well, apparently.
Yes. So he's saying, I'm sorry. Yet he's going to wipe everything clean in order to create hopefully beauty in the future.
Yeah.
The picture that he had, which was a world that was empty of people, that was beautiful and wonderful and pure.
Yeah.
And the only people were on the island.
Yeah. Yeah, the only people. So everything out there was unadulterated. You could go start a new world that was better.
Yeah.
Even though what was now. Now, here's the thing.
So in order to make that possible, he's like, I'm just going to wipe everything out.
Yeah.
And then maybe you guys can do better somewhere else.
Well, okay. So yeah, this is what we were talking about right after we were watching this today is, so Aaron's playing God. I think we all understand that perfectly well.
Yes.
It goes without saying. Like, he's playing God here because now he's playing the judge. He's saying, mm-hmm. they got to live and they don't. And I'm the one with the power and
I can make
it just be better. Yeah. This is what I want to do. I want to wipe everyone out. This is what I think is best. So that's what he's doing. And the thing is, the God complex is thick amongst the people of Attack on Titan because there was a Zeke's thing as well. And even mm-hmm. Kassavra to an extent. The God complex was, I'll just wipe all these people out. That'll make everything better. And we said this at the time with Zeke's euthanization plan was that, okay, well, you aren't getting rid of. You say, oh, we're getting rid of the Titans. Right. But you literally live in a world right now that's about to make Titans obsolete because they're going to war with more advanced stuff, more deadly, more destructive stuff than Titans were. And so his mind is like, oh, if I get rid of these weapons, then mankind will be good. But he's making a mistake. If I get rid of the, and he goes, oh, if I get rid of the Eldians, if I just do this one genocide, if I just get rid of this race of people, then the Titans go away, and then the war and the suffering, all that stuff goes away, and then basically I solve a bunch of problems. I'm righteous. I'm God. I have the best idea. I'm going to implement it. I'm going to subvert everyone's will to go do this thing because he thinks he knows what's righteous. Aaron's doing the mm-hmm. exact same thing mm-hmm. on just a bigger scale.
Yes.
I know what's right. I go kill everybody. I wipe everything clean. But they both forget something, which is we
that
do this in actual
human
world.
Human beings yes. exist.
Yes.
And humans the evil exist. And vices that are in humans, wherever they are, will pop back up eventually, given enough time.
They yes. both have
they
gross.
They all forget that, apparently. It's ridiculous.
There's an imagination. It's an idealism. And people have this in real life all the time. There's an idealism where it's like, oh, well, if circumstances were better, or if we got rid of some people and not the others, then finally people would be good and righteous and virtuous and kind to each other all the time.
Let's just get rid of all science. Let's just not, you know, let's stay in the Stone Age. That doesn't really work either. No. Eventually murderers pop up.
Exactly.
Eventually wickedness happens and rapists and all the bad things. It all because the human heart is wicked.
Yes. Evil is in the heart of mankind.
It's just there.
Period. So anyway,
I think, I was going to say, they all have rose-colored glasses
mm-hmm.
because if in Marley, outside of, you know, Liberio, there was peace and there was harmony and there was no crime and there was joy. Then they have something to say, yeah. But there's not, right?
No, there's not.
If in paradise, yeah, if there was peace and there was harmony and there wasn't a caste system,
right.
And there wasn't, you know, these people underground,
Mikasa getting abducted as a little girl and her mom dying in front,
yeah.
So what it tells us is, even if you have these separate places where racism can't, you know, integrate in the way you think is causing the main problem, you get rid of one race, Zeke, yeah, but there's still other races, and the people are still gonna
they're gonna find something
to fight about.
Well, yeah, and even even if everybody is of the same tribe, even within that tribe, they're gonna find ways to make the others happen.
Even if all that's left after the rumbling is the island, Aaron thinks, okay, well now
look at how the island live in
peace. Like, they're gonna live in peace. Guys like Flock are gonna make the island live in peace. Really think that? Like, the dude is out for blood.
If you preach peace while getting it,
destroying
while
the world,
getting it with a sword, like, no, it's not exactly the way. So they have these rose colored glasses. Both of them think they have a way to stop the suffering, but you have to come to grips with it. You're never going to stop the suffering. How do we do the best thing for the most amount of people to mitigate?
Yeah, what do you do in the midst of suffering? It's not, can I make my life perfect? You're never going to make your life perfect. Can you find grace to endure a life that isn't perfect? Can you live in a virtuous way through the pain and suffering? That's what gives life meaning. Yes. And the thing is, so I was going to say this a second ago, nihilism. That's what this is.
Oh, yeah.
The word for it, for Aaron and for Zeke both, is nihilism, which is, it kind of just rejects things like objective truth and morality, and these things are kind of like this basis, and it's a very extremely wishy-washy way of looking at it. And what you end up with is a scenario like this one, which is, I guess the solution is just kill everyone, you know? And
so they both have a God complex, right?
Yeah.
Zeke is, I'm going to become God. I'm going to use God's powers to end the Eldians. Aaron is, I'm going to use God's powers to rain judgment on the world. Okay, so Aaron, both of them are taking some sort of the Islam
moral
is using,
authority, yeah.
And Islam is using these biblical themes. Aaron is taking the flood. He said, the world is sinful.
Yeah.
I'm going to preserve a certain amount of people.
Yeah, and then
and
purge
I'm going
the
to
rest.
Purge the rest of people because of their wickedness, right? Now, Zeke is saying something, you know, similar but different. I'm going to crush a small amount of people so the rest of the world won't have these wicked, you know.
Yeah.
You know,
Elena's on yet another track, which is like, euthanasia plan, but then just do like kill some people. And then everybody's got like a different.
But in this, where is the major flaw in the problem with both of them?
Well, I mean, the Titans aren't actually the problem. Really?
Correct.
But they want to pretend like the Titans are the only problem that humanity has. And it's definitely not.
It's not just perspective, though. I'd say both of them, the problem is that they're not good judges because they don't have all objective sight.
Yeah.
And if you want to have a judge, you want to have a judge that is not God.
That has no skin in the game.
No skin in the game. You don't want to have a judge who goes, I'm from this town that you want to take out.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you an impartial judge. No, you're not. You're from that town, Aaron, right? You're going to go in the way of your people. Zeke is, you know, he's experienced the suffering. He saw Kisavar's pain and he goes, I'm for you, Dad. Like, he's not impartial. Both of them are being partial and they're making these godlike judgments without having all knowledge and without seeing things objectively.
Yeah.
The reason that, like, you know, you look at, you know, the God of the Bible, the reason that he, you know, can be a judge, whether you like him or not, is because
he is
impartial and he's objective and he can see all things as, you know, according to the Bible. So when he makes a judgment, he's able to do so righteously and justly, whether you agree with it or not.
Yeah. Who can you trust with the power? It's kind of like always the question when it comes to like issuing a judgment. This is true, like a normal, like day to day life. Like, why? You know, you got kids at home or whatever. Why is mom the one to decide, like, the argument who gets the candy or whatever? It's because, you know, mom's she's smarter and wiser and, you know,
she
saw which kid hit the other kid first, you know.
Exactly.
And then
she wants
justice
only to happen. She wants the best thing for both of
you. She's the most objective. So she's entrusted with the power because in that scenario, she's supposed to be the most, you know, objective and impartial one. So it's why do you go to a jury of your peers but when you commit a crime or whatever? It's kind of the same idea. So can we, as best we can, you know, obviously we suck because we're humans, but as best you can, like, you assemble people who you assemble jurors, and the idea with the jurors is they're people who don't know the defendant and they're people who don't have the winner selected jurors bias. So you're looking for, it's like, oh, this is a case about a drunk driver, you know, killing somebody. Well, if somebody on the jury has a family member who's close to them that died in a drunk driving accident, it's probably gonna create
this
partiality.
They don't get chosen for the jury.
And so you want to give You want to give authority.
Objectivity.
You want to give the authority of judgment to those where there's impartiality.
They're going
to
love justice only. They're not going to love one side or the other.
Sure. And this is, yeah, this is supposed to be equal weights. That's the idea.
The one caveat we could give here, because, you know, in this case, like, you know, Hitler, he thought he was right. He thought he was going to use, yeah, you know, he was doing God's will or whatever. He was going to be God, and he was going to decide how the world was going to be. He's going to remake the world in his own image. We look at that and go, that's objectively wrong because you're not God, even though you want to act like God and you want to use all these powers, but you don't see all the truth. You're biased, and, mm-hmm, and therefore you're wicked. And we see the same thing in Aaron and in Zeke.
Zeke?
Sorry.
I was like, not Erwin.
Yeah, yeah. No. Erwin's perfect, okay?
No. Erwin is Jesus. No, he's
so,
not.
So the reason that we see these things and we say, hey, this is also wickedness in Aaron and in Zeke, is because they don't have all the knowledge. Unless Aaron actually has, because of his Titan powers, he is able to see into the future so much so and have these future memories that he has seen.
Ooh, I see what you're saying.
There's one way to unite the world and stop all the fighting. And he knows it's going to work because he's seen it. Mm-hmm. And this is the only, he's doing a Doctor Strange. He's looked through all the possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, I have to do this, Tatake. I have to keep fighting, not just to kill the world, but to bring the world together. And if this is the only path, me being the villain that these guys need to hate, to bring the whole world together, which we see some of that in the latter part of chapter 2, I think that could be a really interesting take, is he's going to become the villain,
yeah,
to bring the whole world together to
he
stop
some
of the suffering.
Perhaps to an extent the God complex is justified if
he knows everything.
With his kind of foreknowledge, he has enough, yeah, to go, okay, mm-hmm, no, this actually is the best case, yeah, scenario.
I don't think he knows everything, so I still think it's not justified, but I'm really curious to see how it finds out. Yeah.
So all this is kind of playing out. I just think it's interesting. I mean, you guys watched it, so you saw this is all Aaron's little dialogue and stuff going on here is playing out as we're seeing these two little boys. They're running
and he drops
the money
lives,
and then they gets crushed and he's like, I wanted this. And then it's like the kids just exploding under the weight of the
there's
Titans.
Like debris falling and crushing them.
Yeah.
He sees Ymir.
They're bursting.
Yeah, he sees Ymir, which is really interesting. I'm sure that's going to connect a little more. I don't know if I have a solid theory into,
yeah,
why.
Yeah, he sees child Ymir too.
It's the kid that sees Ymir specifically because they show it from him, from the kid. Yeah. Ramses, because he's on his side. Remember, he's fallen. He's on his, yeah, side, and you see her, you know, now she's standing, you know, perpendicular to his line of sight at this point. And yeah, it's a little girl Ymir. That's who he sees, and then he gets crushed.
And I wonder, is
not
that,
sure what that's about.
Is that just Ymir, like, witnessing the power that she gave to Aaron and being like,
perhaps,
oh my gosh.
It's also makes me wondering if that kid was Eldian, and we just didn't know, because why else would
he
see
that?
No,
he was, because...
No, they specifically aren't. That's why they're not in the camps and stuff. No, like that. They're refugees.
Remember in the warrior program, there was one of the boys. He had the same hat.
Wait, really?
They're from a land that was conquered by Marley. They're Eldian.
Oh.
So maybe that's why the refugee camp was
like
hidden someplace
outside of the regular Eldians, and they're like despised because they're foreign.
But wouldn't they be in a camp? Wouldn't they be in Liberio type thing? If
they were like just outside of Liberio, kind of.
No, because that little camp thing they had was up in the hills. I thought that was the whole idea. Because remember, those kids are what?
Udo was from there.
I'm pretty sure he had the same red.
Yeah. No, you're right though.
He had the same skin color, all of it.
I thought they were fighting him in a war.
He was from the United something or other.
The Mideast Empire, maybe? Because the, yeah, Mideast Empire, or whatever it was, or whatever it was called, was right at the beginning of season 4. That's the war that they're fighting with where Reiner and the Beast, mm-hmm, take out the ship and whatnot. And I don't know.
Anyway, perhaps. Perhaps he's Eldian. Perhaps it's just like...
The only way he could see Ymir is if he's Eldian.
Well, that's what I'm wondering.
I think it's more of a judgment. I think it's more like the angel of death.
That's what I'm saying, is perhaps the Ymir setting here is actually a...
Part of the lore is that they were forced to breed with all...
It's true. There could be DNA.
Yeah. I mean, maybe partially they're Eldian and not fully. Who knows?
Yeah. So at any rate, this scene kind of continues, and you've got
the statue of Helios.
Yeah, the statue of Helios that gets knocked over, yeah, and it's like, oh, we need a hero, and that's like, it's all that kind of, mm-hmm, imagery kind of comes back into play.
The
people are stampeding each other.
Mm-hmm.
this is where we see a really, really poignant, there's so much animation here that speaks where, like, you don't need any dialogue. It just says a lot, just the imagery. Mm-hmm. So, like, the Titans go through and they after, you know, Aaron's going to have his little spiel, they kill the kids, and they show just what's behind the Titans, and it's just desolate. So they start with a little blood spatter, the little blood stain that is now, that was the kid. The kid is now just a smear on the ground and a footprint, a giant one, and it keeps zooming out, and it's just this arid, desert, flaming hellscape, you know, World War One style, and
it
worse.
Looks like a nuclear bomb went off.
Is this the freedom and the reality that Aaron's envisioned?
Yeah, well, it's really awkward that part. I can't remember where this is, where it's like he's like, oh, this is, Aaron actually says, this is freedom. It's right before they cut to Armin. And we'll keep that in a second.
It's a dramatic scene. We see the birdcage Titan. We see Aaron, and he's walking among this the hell that he's creating. And he's
finally
so
see
much
how
bigger
big he is.
Yeah, than the colossal Titans.
Oh,
yeah,
he looks like that. A demonic snake bone skeleton thing. He's got like the really super pointy ears.
Yeah.
Oh, the stringy hair. Yeah. He looks like a skeleton.
He says,
good job making him look like some kind of demon. This is,
he does
one.
Look like a devil,
like,
for
he's
real.
He's not the hero, right?
Yeah, yeah.
From the moment I was born, there was always a stifling wall before me, is what he says.
Yeah.
And then we see him as a kid kind of standing up on the wall or like looking out over, like, you know, outside. And he says, fiery water, lands of ice, the people who witnessed these things were the ones who obtained the greatest freedom in the world. This is freedom. And so I think the picture that we get from Aaron is he looked at the canvas of the world. He looked at the things he saw outside the walls that he hoped were so beautiful and clean and open, and all these things, all the hopes that he had got ran into the fact that humanity is fallen and wicked, racist and war, you know, hungry. And he goes, can I just live for this? Or no, I'm going to crush it all so that there can be freedom again for the next generation of people. This is freedom. Freedom is exploring unknown depths and finding these beautiful creations and not running into wicked people. Yeah. Freedom is the innocence of the world again. And he wants to bring that. And that's a noble way. But if you're doing that by murdering everybody, you're the villain, buddy.
So Aaron's giving this spiel and it's intercut with scenes of him as the little boy saying, you know, oh, giving his spiel. And then it's intercut with the scenes of people dying. So there's a scene where it's like somebody's head is just rolling down a hill. There's another scene where it's like a silhouette of a man pulling a gun and killing himself for the Titans get to him committing suicide. There's the like people like cramming
the
in
mother
each other
and
into
her
the trains.
Two children screaming in the street, his grandparents dying.
I forgot about we see Aaron's grandparents or whatever in prison, and they say, is this the judgment day? Has judgment finally come for us or whatever?
It's such a poignant picture of the fact that, so this is Aaron, who in season two becomes the Wings of Freedom guy who puts the boulder in the wall, right? Or is that season one?
I think it's season one where he gets the boulder in.
It's the very
remember,
end.
It's kind of like the 4th of July episode. It's the Wings of Freedom, right? He goes like, we need to have, I'm going to like example freedom and I'm going to put the boulder in the wall and people are going to be free and I'm going to become who I need to be. And like, he's like this avenging freedom warrior.
Mm-hmm.
And this is that beautiful ideal along the way got twisted. And now he's saying, this is freedom. And he's innocent little kid as he's murdering millions of people to get his dream.
And they contrast it in the imagery. Because the part that struck me the most is Aaron, and they see him and you see the blue skies and they pan to just the blue skies.
Yeah.
And they go blue skies. And then the camera goes down and looks at the desolate earth, literally like a bloody mess full of people. And then it goes back to the blue skies. And Aaron's like, he says that final line. He's like, oh, we made it here.
And hell.
Yes. And he's like, well, we made it here to see this, haven't we, Armin? And he like turns around, little boy, Aaron turns around to Armin. Armin's like in the path for a second.
And Aaron's talking to him.
Yeah.
And then we go to Armin on the ship.
Dude,
so
what a crazy,
good, dude.
Crazy bit. Yeah. So Armin finally has his, he gets to talk to his crush. Fun scene.
They're both blushing. It's rather cute.
It
actually
is cute. This is where he kind of brings up the whole, let's see here. Annie actually invites him to sit down, which, you know, that's always a good sign. Like, if you like a girl, she's like, hey, well, come sit next to me. It's usually
good. She almost seems offended that he likes her, too.
She's Annie. Of course she is. She's pissed at everything.
But I mean, like, she gets emotional and, like, cries a little bit. Like, she's sad that he likes her.
Yeah. That's the survivor's guilt. That's the fact that she is coming to grips with. She's a monster. How could he like someone like me?
Yeah.
That's totally what she's saying.
So she says, you know, thank you for talking to me all these years. And it was, you know, I was so lonely. It was crazy. And he's all getting all awkward and blushy or whatever. And she's like, yeah, it was just meant so much to be hearing you and Hitch. And she's like, why did you bother to chat with The Rock? Surely there's more cheerful girls to talk to. And Armin actually tells her, like, I did it because I wanted to. It was like, that's when they have their old, like, red face kind of moment and stuff.
If you watch the reaction, I said, it's because a rock can't reject him.
You know? So she's like, you know, in her whole, her whole existential crisis, which clearly the Annie storyline. I'm actually so glad because right for however long in the podcast, we're like, Annie, it was Annie. And then we're like,
it was Annie.
But when is she going to come back around? She finally has. It's actually really good to see, you know, bookends with this character and see, like, you know, time in, what's when you're in prison by yourself, what's it called?
Solitary confinement.
Solitary confinement will change you a little bit.
I like turning into a rock will make you a human being, apparently.
Yeah. Charlock and Tootingle said, Aaron accidentally bringing Armin into the coordinate by mentioning him, I think. Like, Aaron's so caught up in, like, what he's creating that he goes, Armin, and he brings Armin into the path. So Armin's like, what? And then he's back.
Dang. Yeah. That's freaking deep. No, I think that's exactly right.
I think so. Charlie said the accidental Discord ping.
At
Armin. Oh, sorry to me.
Said that. The wrong person. So yes, their conversations, I don't know, it's like semi-interesting enough we have to go into crazy detail.
They
kind of
had
a
rocky relationship.
She says, Million, right now, we're here, but millions of people are being trampled. And she says, you talk to an, what's it?
That's a real thing, though.
What?
The survivor's guilt.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know all that's going on, of course. Imagine the kind of eerie silence. If you ever go to a place where... I'm just trying to think of a good example. Most people have kind of done some. If you've traveled a little bit, especially if you travel in the off season, small towns. I did this a little bit in New York. Like, you go somewhere that's like a summer town or like a lake town. This is definitely true in the Northeast. Their winters are just brutal, so there's no reason to go to certain like kind of vacation spots. It is really a little odd. It's almost unnerving to go into a building or into a town or someplace where there's supposed to be people. But it's just dead silent. For me at least, it's always a little bit unnerving. We did this a couple times in New York, upstate, you know, it's like pretty rural actually. And like, it's a couple of these towns that are like, you know, entirely based around, they come alive during the summer, but they're all just like for activities and there's a little lakefront thing. But during the winter, there ain't nothing going on there. So if you could drive through, hang out for a second, you're like, wow, this is eerie. It's so quiet. It's like unnerving.
Ghost town.
Yeah. So I'm like imagining them on the ship. Actually, they show this a few times now where they're on the boat and they're like, well, I guess I'm good, but that sucks because there's been millions of people out there freaking getting
murdered,
crying out for their lives and getting murdered.
Yeah, but it's a real thing though. It happens in war all the time where like you feel like you can't go on and enjoy your life because you survived and everyone else died.
Yeah.
And
you're flock at it too.
You should have been the one that died, and it's so weird because it's the exact opposite. Like, you survived, so you need to go on and you need to enjoy your life because your friends would have wanted that.
Yeah.
But also, like, it's a real thing right now, even. There's people who get so caught up into what's happening in Ukraine right now. You know, people are dying right there. And we need to have compassion.
Yeah.
But also, they're like, I can't even enjoy my life.
How can I go on? Yeah.
Something that I don't even really, like, I wouldn't even know about other than like a news show or whatever is happening so far away. And their mental health gets really negatively impacted. People go, the climate is changing so much. In 50 years, we're all going to die. And they're so mentally impacted by that possible thing that could happen. They won't reproduce. They won't have kids. They won't enjoy their marriage. They won't, like, it's crazy how much we have an effect on our future and our current mental health.
Yeah.
And I think this is a real thing that's happening. They're on a boat. They're like, millions of people are dying. And this is a hesitation. They're like, why should we get to have a relationship? Why should we get to be happy when people are dying somewhere?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's been happening throughout all of time.
Yeah.
If we were to live like that, why should I get to have happiness because someone doesn't? No one would ever be happy.
Yeah, it's an additional.
No one would ever have kids.
Also fatalism.
No one would get married or
also,
do anything.
We have to.
A good indicator that the people you should be, or the things you should be most concerned with are the things that are local. Like, this is genuinely true. The stuff you should be most concerned with in your life are the people that are immediately around you. Like, the best place to show charity is to your own family. The best place to show charity is to somebody who lives on your street. The best place to do good, make an impact in the world, is right in front
of you.
Do what
you can.
It's at your job. It's at your school. It's all that. Yeah.
And there is time and place to send money overseas and try to help with, we try to send money to to like food programs and water programs and stuff, because we don't want people to starve and we don't want people to hurt. But if all you do is go, oh, someone somewhere is experiencing trauma, therefore I can never experience joy.
Yeah.
You're
never going to experience joy,
people,
neither are they.
Two people are getting robbed,
yeah,
right?
Everybody.
Two people are getting robbed. And so there's a real survivor's guilt that can happen. And yet also there has to be what Hanjay's saying is like, we have to do what we can do. We have to enjoy life. And this is what Erwin said, right? Like, our comrades gave our lives for us. We have to live life to the fullest.
Yeah.
And so there's a kind of like a cheesy people like, live a life worth living, you know? And it's kind of like a cheesy headline, but like, there's some real truth through it. A lot of people don't. All men, you know, live, and all men die. Not all men truly live, yeah. Right? There's something to be said about you. You are obligated to use your life in the best way possible, to enjoy relationships and to enjoy life and to have friends and to give to your local community and to try to help people to the best of your ability, because not everybody got the same opportunity that you did. And the way to honor the fact that someone's not getting that is not to abstain from it yourself, is to actually utilize it to the best of your ability, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. And so I just wanted to recognize that it's a real thing, and yet what's the solution to it? It's not having a relationship and being all abstract and distraught. It's actually pushing forward and continuing to honor the people who made that possible for you. So
mm-hmm. Yeah. So their conversation kind of gets to an interesting point where, you know, Annie's like, oh, you talk to your enemy because you're a good person, and he kind of like responds to that. And she says, the same reason you won't give up on talking things out with Aaron. She says, I could have woken up, but really you were just talking to the monster to avoid the conflict. And so she stands up to leave. He like grabs her hand. This is actually like a cute moment. It's like, this is one of the first like real romances in the show kind of at all.
It's
There's
true.
Some relational
There's
stuff.
A little bit, but
it's very minor. This is the first time we had main characters with this, like, you know, where there's now like a serious, like a love interest thing. I feel like just Japanese media stories, they just aren't as into it as we are. We like love a good, you know, romance story.
But it's always awkward for them. Everything's like, oh,
yeah, super subtle. All the undertones. Like,
it's never just
very.
It's never just like a dude
so
like,
much
I'll
tension.
Die for you. I love you.
Yeah.
Me, you
right,
know?
Yeah. So, so yeah. So he says, you know, I told you before. I hate that phrase. Good person. I've killed people too. I guess you know.
Well, she says the reason you came to talk to me all that time is because you're a good person.
Yeah.
You want to talk it out. You don't want to have conflict. You want to solve the conflict by talking.
Yes.
And that's why you're going to go try to talk to Aaron.
Yes. She knows Armin pretty well. It's basically what she's saying. Like, you may not know me as well, but I know you pretty well. I heard you for years. And I know that you're not going to go and try and kill him first. You're going to try and talk him out of it first. Yes. In fact, he's already tried. Like, this won't be the first time.
But I appreciated this. I think this is how we always should go. Like, if,
yes.
Unless you're absolutely sure there's no
swords
negotiating.
Swords are second.
Pen first, then the sword.
Yeah.
But you better keep that sword handy, I'm just saying.
You're going to need it at some point.
Stay strapped.
So he says this, you know, I've killed people or whatever too. And he says basically the same line.
He's killed more people than
Aaron.
She has at this point.
Yeah. He says the same line as Aaron says. He says the world is different from the world that we dreamed of, you know, when we were kids or back behind the walls. And he says this really interesting line, which I'm pretty sure plays out somehow. He says, I still want to believe that there's something beyond the walls that we don't know about.
So this is the difference between the hero and the villain.
Yeah.
And this is the beautiful
Armin's
part.
Armin's the hero of the story.
We didn't know it. We didn't know it because for so long he was passive. For so long he was scared. For so long he wasn't the person we thought he should be. He almost died, right?
He gets anointed king of the... Not king, but he becomes the captain of the...
The captain of the scouts,
of the scouts.
Right? He's the leader.
The
hero,
that's
yeah.
later, but...
He's the new... He's near Erwin, and the reason he is because he's A, optimistic. B, he thinks. He wants to solve problems before going to fists. Aaron just always has gone straight to fists, right?
First.
We always remember that.
For sure.
And then also, right here, they have two different worldviews. Both of them had the hope in their heart that beyond the walls was going to be something beautiful, a hope, a future, something, a canvas they could paint a masterpiece on for humanity, right? They found a disgusting, nasty, war-torn, you know, world that was the opposite of what they hoped for. Aaron's response, I'm going to kill everybody and make it clean again. Armin's response is, there's something worth fighting
something
for.
Something worth saving here.
Even though humanity is disgusting, there is still good. There is still beautiful mm-hmm. moments. There's still good things that are going to happen. And so I'm willing to keep searching for something that I haven't found yet. I think that's the beautiful part of the story. We're going to see two different trees here, the Armin and the Armin and the Aaron view.
And the Mikasa got in between.
Kind of right in the middle of it, Falco starts screaming.
Yeah, this is so they cut
like
from the scene
up.
And they go to the harbor or whatever. Yeah, he's like crying in the most intense possible. He's screaming
and he's like, what do you mean everyone's dead? Yeah. And like, the rumbling, like he's just coming to terms with all the horror and that his brother's gone and he technically killed him and he ate the Jaw Titan. Who was that, his cousin?
It's his brother. Or the, when he to get the Jaw Titan power, he eats some, what's his name? He eats his brother.
Yeah, what's his name?
Wait. His older brother.
I thought
his older brother dies. His older brother is
holding on to him when he changes.
He eats.
Oh,
when Zeke the brother screams. Of
yes.
No, he eats the.
He eats the.
Colt is Falco's older brother, who's hugging him when he transforms into a Titan. So he dies there. But the Titan, the
Galliard.
Galliard. Sorry, I couldn't say it for a second. Galliard. And then Galliard's brother was.
The leader that Reiner took over for.
Yes.
Marcel.
Sorry. Yeah. It's
thank
all,
you for so helping us with names. Eric and I suck at names sometimes, okay?
Oh, all the time for me.
All the times.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah, they established most of Martin's already
they
dead.
They weren't relatives. They just knew each other.
Armin. Hanje and Kiyomi start to launch the flying airboat.
Yeah.
We see them getting ready. They take, there's all the explosives.
And Armin's actually the one who points out, like, hey, save those explosives. They might come in handy.
The brain is working.
Dude, he's always on top of it.
And he stays strapped. That's all I'm saying. Okay.
Stay strapped and get clapped.
Mikasa comes to Annie. Annie's sitting there dejected, like she just got broken up with, you know?
Yeah, dude, this is an interesting conversation right here.
She walks over to her and she goes, here's the new gear. I'm sure you're not familiar with it. Take some time to familiarize yourself with it.
Go practice with Reiner.
Annie goes, what's the point? And Mikasa says,
yeah, we got to do all we can.
We got to do the things that we can do.
Yeah.
We can't stop the rumbling from happening right now, but we need to get ready to do the things that we can do. That's the truth.
Yes.
All you can do is the things that you can do. The things that you can affect right now are the things you can do. You can't go back in the past. You can't change it. You can learn from it. Keep pushing forward, okay?
So yeah, she says she's going to stay back behind. And she says, this whole conversation is actually really interesting. She says, okay. I don't really get it. Like, you want to save humanity or whatever, but I don't really get that. The Eldians that are in Marley were persecuted by the rest of humanity that you want to save. Okay. It gets lost a little bit because this conversation is very chill, but this point here is like a juxtaposition that worth thinking about for a second.
Mm-hmm.
You want to save the humanity that wants to kill you. Okay. And this is what I was saying when we were watching. I'm like, this is exactly the difference between love and vengeance, right? Godliness and godlessness. This is Aaron is just a hand of vengeance. He sees the people who've done him wrong, and not just him. I mean, this is like common. This happens throughout the show. It's like, oh, you did wrong, or I just don't like you, or I have whatever my reasons are, and I'm going to go after the people who hurt me. That's the main thing I'm going to do. I have the power, therefore I'm going to go and do it. Mm-hmm. Okay. Annie accidentally points out that Mikasa, Armin, Hanje, Levi, pick kind of the whole squad, Reiner included,
McGath.
McGath and Kay Sadies and stuff like that. All these guys, you now start to, the show starts to now coalesce, at least morally, with that one line, with the actual difference between the two. The difference between one is I have to go to wipe them out because I think they're going to come destroy the island, so I'm going to destroy all them first. There's a massive difference between that and these people are the ones who want to persecute me. They are probably going to come and kill me. Eldians are not going to be in a good position, even if we stop the rumbling. We're going to be, you know, hated by the world. To think of this is real love. Somebody who hates you, who actually wants your harm, and you go out of your way to save their life anyway.
If you're wondering who the hero is, it's not the people that are going to kill everybody. It's the people who are going to willing to die for the people.
Ladies and gentlemen. We have virtue. This is what that is. This is what that means. Now, I know we've kind of already brought up some of the, all the religious overtones have already like come through in the show. So I feel like this is like, I have to bring up the point right here. But this, again, just, you know, New Testament, Christian, you know, Bible believing person, like this is what that, this is that, that message, right? This is the message of Jesus on the cross.
Yeah.
Jesus goes to the cross and his enemies are literally there killing him. Like, he's only done good for them, but they hate him. They hate his guts. And they're all around us, the Romans and, you know, the high, religious people, the religious leaders. They're all there and they're crucifying him. And even there on the cross, he says, Father, forgive them for they know not what they do. Right? And this ends up being like the message of the gospel just as you go on. Like, the Bible makes it clear, you get into Romans, you get in the rest of it, is that the message is even is Jesus says, even to a world that hates me, like, I love you, I'm willing to sacrifice, I'm willing to go to bat for you, I'm willing to go to the ends to you because I love you and I want you to be with me where I am. Right? That's kind of the whole point.
Turn the other cheek.
Yeah, turn the other cheek. And so the idea is that that's what real virtue and real godly love looks like. And so what I was going to bring up, this is actually a verse I was thinking of when I saw it the first time, is Jesus points this out to I think it's Sermon on the Mount. He says, you know, what are you if you're only nice to people who are nice to you?
Yeah.
He's like, that's not really anything. Like, you know, that. What are you if you're only, basically you only do favors for people who know, you know, that they can repay those favors. That's nice and all, but you know that you're basically making an equal deal. He goes on and he says, real righteousness, like real, the practice of goodness is where even you do good for people who can't give anything back to you. In fact, you do good to people who hate you and who persecute you and despise you.
Love your enemies.
You love your enemies. And
that's greater love has this than one would lay his life down for his friends.
Yeah. And my point is, like, that's a.
Or his enemies.
That's an actually revolutionary idea. And I just think that this, where she says it here, she goes, you know, I don't get it. Like, you want to go, like, these are the people who'd persecute. These are people, these are Dylan's and Marley. The Eldians and Marley were persecuted by the humanity that you want to save. Like, these people have already, like, you know, they have a proven tracker that they want to come and get you and you want to save them. I just don't understand it. I'm like, Annie, you don't understand it because you don't know what virtue it looks like. You don't know what nobility looks like. You don't know what heroism and bravery looks like. This is what it looks like, is you would go to bat even for somebody who wouldn't do it at a turn because that's a high.
She was raised as a warrior. You only do what, you know, what you can, and you fight what you can. Like, her dad, you know, just basically taught her, like, you have to be strong and fight. Not about, like, the virtue and the reasons why.
The whys, like a fear.
We have another historical example of this that I have always loved was in the founding of America, the founding of our country. There's, you know, this rebellion that's happening in the midst of colonial-controlled, redcoat-controlled America. Well, we wouldn't call it, I don't know, the colonies. And you've had these, you know, these imperialists and these redcoats, and they occupy these areas, but there's real rebellion growing about, we want to be our own country. We want to be separated from, you know, from the English tyranny, and we don't want King George to rule over us. We want to have freedom. And so there's a real rebellion, a real fight, a real struggle happening, and these small hot pockets are breaking out.
Yeah,
you've heard about the shot heard around the world.
Pocket.
Yeah, the shot heard around the world of, like, you had these, you know, we don't know who it was, redcoats and some rebels, colonialists or whatever, that shot at each other during a protest. Someone shot a gun and, you know, killed somebody during a protest, right? And maybe it was an angry
intentional
protest,
or maybe it was
a peaceful pro. I don't know. We don't know. But the whole thing was, as bad stuff was happening, right? Mm-hmm. People were freaking out. There was mayors being tarred and feathered, burned alive by these rebels. But there's also redcoats, right? Who, you know, these people who were loyalists, English loyalists, who were beating and raping and taking cities because they're like, oh, these guys are just rebels, right? And, like, so there's real bad stuff happening on both sides. And the whole point of America being America was, like, we wanted to have a country that wasn't just ruled by a king, that was ruled by a set of virtues, right? That every man ought to have, you know, the pursuit of happiness and life and justice and these and
liberty.
Everyone's created in the image of God, and everyone has these natural rights. And so we're not going to tread upon someone's natural rights, even though the country did, obviously. But these beautiful ideals are the founding of the country. And in that, that's not being shown here as we're killing redcoats and redcoats are killing Americans and these bad things are happening.
The war.
And so even when this breaks out, one of the founding fathers, John Adams, actually says, not like this. We don't want a country like this. And so he actually, he's one of the signers of the Constitution. He's one of the guys that, you know, is on the Declaration of Independence, wants to, like, to separate and be the own country. He's pro-American. And yet he goes and acts as a lawyer for redcoats in court.
Yeah.
And his own family's like, how could you do this? These guys are terrible.
These are traitors.
And he goes, I will not found a country based on a false sense and a wicked, twisted justice. These guys are going to get a fair trial in our land, in our new land.
Yes.
And he exemplifies.
Dang, dude.
He defends
even
the very
people
ones
who hate him.
Who hate him because he's like, it's the right thing to do. They're going to get true justice here, and we're not going to have a crony court like they had back in England.
It's principle. Isn't a word we doesn't get thrown around much these days, but that's what principle is. There's Bible verses to keep coming up here, but while we're at it, the Psalm 15 says, you know, righteousness is a man who swears to his own hurt and does not change. You make a commitment, and even if it damages you in some temporary way, like, you do it because of an eternal value, an eternal principle. Anyway. Okay, yeah, so then we get to, yeah, more of this really interesting kind of Annie thing, because she's doing more typical Annie stuff here. She's like, I'm going to stay behind. You go do whatever.
I can't fight anymore, even though I've been in a shell for, like, the last several years, and you guys have been fighting every day of your life.
Dude, they, like, there's that part where, like, the boat's taken off, and they're like, oh, Annie's already fought enough. I think Connie says that. I'm like, Connie, what are you smoking, bro?
Like, she's been in a freaking shell. Why is everybody acting like Annie has fought so much?
She's the most rested, like, person.
She's been asleep for 6 years. What's going on?
She did fight one battle at the harbor with a bunch of scouts.
You know, and then she turned into a rock.
We're not saying it hasn't been harder than her. It's been harder than her. She's had the most rest. Reiner?
Reiner has fought more than anybody, and he's going to go fight.
He's ready.
Why isn't anybody saying, Reiner, you should rest?
Reiner's like, my body's ready. So they say that even if we stop the rumbling with Marley, there'd be no one left to protect the Eldians.
Yeah, that's the point I was making earlier. It's like, you're going to be in a vulnerable spot after this.
We got to do.
Yeah.
She says, I want to spend the rest of my time, Annie says, I want to spend the rest of my time living peacefully.
And then a wistful gaze in Armin's direction.
And she looks over Armin like, hey, we could be together, bae, if you want to stay. Make some new Eldians.
He's like, no, I'm going to go to my death. Sorry, babe.
Mikasa looks over and goes, when did this happen? Like, oh no, like, I see it, but he's going to get on board with
us. Again, it's so understated in the anime. Like, they literally never just come out and say, you like him, or you have a crush, or there's romance. They don't use any of those words. They just go, when did this happen? What happened? And like, it's so...
But she goes, like, he's coming with us. Why wouldn't you want to come with us?
Yeah.
And she goes, no, I need to stay peacefully. I fought too much. And she says,
You don't have to suffer anymore.
You don't have to suffer anymore.
That's a good line.
And then Annie says, hey, where's your scarf? And she goes, oh, I still have it. She goes, are you going to go kill Aaron? And she goes, no, he's far away, but I'm going to bring him back.
Yeah, he's gone someplace else, but I'm going to bring him back. She says, no, I can't do that, but I'm going to go and bring him back.
That's a beautiful projection. I think that in the end,
that might be a forecast.
She's going to whip the scarf out to kind of break through the monster that Aaron's become, that he's made himself out to be, and he's going to soften, and that's going to be the way to, like, get into him.
Yeah.
So that's my prediction there.
Okay, so now we get our
they get to shatter all this wonderful stuff with Elena's mug.
Yeah, well, with Levi first, because it's true. Like, Armin's like, Levi, like, you can't, you're not in good
you need
shape.
To go back to bed, you lunatic.
This line, I didn't understand his response.
He looks
until,
like, freaking Scarecrow now with, like, his bandage and his, like, scars and his stitched face.
I can kill me sometimes.
He's got, like, two fingers.
He's drooling.
He's like, I'm still going to win.
Did you think he would ever be anything but that? Like, that's who he is. No,
Zeke, fully healing on his best day, still couldn't deal with it.
Yeah, exactly. No, okay, Levi comes out. This line, when we watched it the second time, is when I got this. He goes, I'll be damned if that bearded bitch doesn't tell us where Aaron's going next. And I was like, okay, well, I know he's talking about Yelena, because the next scene, you know, they got Yelena and they're like, okay, tell us everything. And she does. But I forgot. Remember when she's undercover, she has the beard on. He has to cooperate with her while she's undercover. And so that's why he calls her that. It's just funny to me, like, literally years later, refers to her.
I think it's interesting here, because we go to the scene.
Levi's just trolling forever.
Yelena, and Yelena is... she's saying, like, well, here's where I would go. And then, you know, if he's personally leading it, I think he's going to go here. And so they're going to start, you know, in the Corifa naval
ports. Yep.
And then they're going to go, I would go to Fort Salto. That's the southern mountain fortress.
Aaron asks, because Aaron's even being tackled. He asks her, because they flash back to this moment where it's Aaron and Yelena, you know, scheming. And he's like, so would that be the only target? And she's like, well, actually, yeah. There's one other one. Yeah, Fort Salto.
So then she goes, hey, before you guys go, can you just do me one solid? Can you just tell me that I was right? Zeke was right. Can you guys just please?
I know Zeke was defeated, but please admit that his plan was perfect.
Why she be like that?
So I think I love this because...
And she's like crying.
Because at the end of the world, she still has this one belief and she can't be wrong about it, right? This is her religion. She's a Zeke zealot.
She's a zealot.
And she holds
on
to it. And in the end, you see Levi and he's like, I need to do one thing. I need to kill Zeke. Like, that's his religion, right? Yeah. He has to fulfill.
Levi's also
a zealot. You're right, yeah. And so when people are pressed,
they're
you see what comes out
Zeke
is the thing that they
ways.
Hold on to. Yeah, exactly. Hanji says, I admit that I couldn't show Aaron a hope or a future. And Hanja kind of admits that she's right. Like,
yeah, okay, we're talking
better,
about Scylla,
better
yeah.
than killing everybody, I would say. But I hope that that's not.
But
not
she, the way. It's interesting because she actually like takes ownership of the whole situation. Basically, she goes,
taking
"I'm sorry,
responsibility."
It's
baby.
Not even really on her, but she does it anyway. Like again, that's what virtue looks like. She says, "Yeah, I wasn't able to show the Aaron future. I felt, you know, I was powerless." I'm yeah. like, oh man, she but doesn't then, think she. Here's what's interesting. She says she thinks of herself as powerless in the past tense.
And yet she's still going
to
go
and her
something.
Abilities to communicate with Aaron, but she doesn't think of herself that in the present tense and no. her ability to fight the Rumbling, which is insane.
She doesn't let her wreck her. She goes, what can I do?
Yeah.
We have to do what we can do. So Falco and Gabby are going to go with Madame Kiyomi.
That's right.
And we found out Annie's going to go with them as well.
Falco's sad.
Kiyomi says, hey, Peek, are you going to go with him too? She says,
this is a great one. Nope, I love Peek.
I'm going to go be a warrior.
She's going to go fulfill my duty as a warrior. Like, a you boss. Keep them safe. Dude, she really is. She's not replaced Sasha. No one replaces Sasha. No. But
right. she's grown on my heart.
As I'm watching
I
the
like
show,
she's
I'm like, okay,
so
you're growing
chill.
On me.
Chill.
Yeah.
Pretty and cool. then and she's strategic and she's smart.
She's yeah. wicked. She's there's
but
a bunch of people
she,
in the show
she
are really
she delivers
sharp,
lines that like to me are similar to Levi's like trolling lines where she especially yeah. at Hanjay.
And she's a backpack.
She's like, that
she
took a dramatic
snacks.
Turn that was super creepy. Like,
yeah, oh, yeah, I forgot about yeah. Where they get the whole conversation.
Yeah, you got to bring snacks, man, for sure. So then Levi can barely even pull the trigger. He yeah. has his pinky finger and he goes, yeah. two fingers is all I need. I can still kill Titans.
I love how Hanjay like fangirls and Pick just like shoots her down immediately. She's like, no, that is never happening.
Cause she wants to ride on the back of Pete.
She's like, you're going to come with us. I would love to feel the heat of your body when I ride on your
so
back.
Weird.
She's like, whoa.
That took a creepy turn.
Yeah.
She's like, no. She's it down instantly.
We have a scene where Reiner and Annie, because kind of, we haven't seen them kind
they
of like
kind of
talk.
Reconcile. Yeah, that's the
Reiner takes responsibility heart heart. For what uh-huh. he did. And he says, I should have stopped the mission a long time ago. And he says, I was thinking about killing you a lot of times.
He's like, I'm glad you didn't.
And they hug.
There's finally a hug in the
Annie
darn
initiates
show.
The hug, too.
Come on, I needed a hug. I
and
wanted
then you
a hug
realize
after
how huge he is compared
Reiner?
To her.
Well, you realize how different. Back when they came in, they were all about the same height. And yeah. now he's a man
he's
now.
He's towering yeah. over even Hanjay. Like, he's enormous.
He's a big yeah. dude, for sure.
Yeah, he's grown to a man, yeah. so then... Hanjay says to Levi, do you think they're all watching us? All of our comrades up there.
Foreshadow. He's like, don't start sounding like him.
Don't start talking about Erwin because he's going to get me. And I'm like, no, talk about him. It's the only
well,
way
yeah,
to keep his memory
alive.
This
is after she, wait, have we skipped over flocking things up?
Nope.
Are you sure?
We're not there yet, I don't think.
Because that conversation between the two of them happens after that.
Oh, did he jump ahead a little bit?
We did.
Maybe.
No.
We totally, yes.
No, I got Flock right here.
Yeah, I have Flock
is
later
way
happening
up
too.
Here.
So right, you fell asleep. I won't trust you.
Okay,
notes.
Listen. No. Because that's Levi and Hunter's last conversation, what you're just talking about.
No.
Where she says, do you...
No.
Do right. you think they're watching us is something, you know, she does say it beforehand.
Because they're getting ready to go on the plane. They think they're about to leave.
Oh, that's right. This yeah. is right before Flock breaks
yes.
in and
then,
messes everything up.
Yes. Then Anya Capone says, man, we're going to make it before the Rumbling gets there. We got only one hour
yeah.
of fuel up.
You're right.
Then a Flock roach appears, dripping wet with his slimy moisture. He's probably just yeah. naturally slimy. And he shoots. Bam, 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 bam. Shoots into the tank.
He just starts shooting wildly like a lunatic.
He shoots hole in the fuel tank.
Okay, wait.
It's going to add another hour.
Okay, yes. But did... I guess we don't have to talk about this. But we skipped over it. Do you think... Don't start sounding like him. He's talking about Erwin.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what we said.
That's
know,
what happened.
I just...
Hanjay
we,
and Levi
we just we said that and then we moved on and I don't want
to
move on because I miss Erwin. I like him. I don't start sounding like him. You could sound like him all you want, Hanjay. She's like, do you think they're watching us? And then within the hour, she's going to be one of them watching.
I think he says that because... Like when he seems almost annoyed with her, like don't start sounding like him because that's what he sounded like right before he died.
Yeah, I think so.
And
I think
Levi doesn't like that she's talking like that because
she's planning on dying.
She's thinking about how close her death is, and Levi knows that, and he doesn't like it.
Levi's like the quintessential like male emotional stereotype throughout the show, which is like. Super stoic, swears, acts like he's not crying when everyone else is crying. He's just like cool as cucumber. But like in his extremely subtle ways, he is like a deep emotional well that he's just like he just expresses it in very subtle
that's
ways.
That's why he
like,
cleans, dude. He's got
to
get it out.
Yeah, like, at the end where he's like, "Give your heart" or whatever to her. I'm like, it's that's the most expressive that the man's ever gonna get.
So, Flock dies. We think.
Praise God.
In a
who
pool of his own
his
blood.
Throat?
Mikasa shoots his in his throat. Her ODM because she hits him with
happens,
it. Right,
okay.
And I'm like, you couldn't have hit him. Any other times
that you tried.
Yeah. So many other chances, like a true Flock roach, the man, he just keeps coming back.
My notes just say Flock flocks things up before he dies.
So they're going to have to weld the fuel tanks. It's going to take another hour, but that bought them some time because the rumbling has started. We hear in the
just
distance.
As they go to reach for the thing to weld the holes back together, which they still haven't put fuel in the tank, which takes an hour too.
Flock begs them to try to not to stop
I was just going
to
say, that this line is pretty good. Yeah, they turn back to him right before he's actually like dead.
He says, save the island.
He our says, devils the devils. Our devils?
Our only hope.
Our only hope. And then is it Hanji? He says, I can't give up to her. Who responds to him here?
Yeah, Hanji
says,
I can't give up.
Even if it seems hopeless today.
Yeah.
And then she goes, but maybe someday. And then doesn't finish the sentence.
Let's go.
Exactly. That optimism is the key
So
here.
We see the rumbling. And immediately,
it's coming.
It's coming. Armin goes, the only idea I have is I have to stay behind. I can go colossal and I can fight him. Let me put some hands on these guys real quick. Hold them off.
But then Reiner's like, no, it's me, right?
Reiner's like, you're too valuable. This is my time. My time is now.
And then Hanji steps in and is like, no, it can't be. We can't waste another time. I was actually waiting for someone else to step in. I was waiting for like three or four more. Like, I am Spartan. Is it Sparta?
Spartacus.
Yeah. Like, I was waiting for all of them.
So Hanji steps up. Hanji leads by taking responsibility and saying, I'm the one who you guys all followed here. I'm the one who's going to do
it. She says, I got your comrades killed. Basically, like they died under my command. Like, it's now my turn.
She anoints Armin as the 15th squad commander of the scouts. So
he's
cool.
He's the best fit. I knew it was coming. The day was coming. And you have to admit, the cool book ending here, because he was spared in, or he was given his second chance at life. Remember him at the end of season three there. It's Commander Irwin and Armin are both like on death row here and they're spared. And Irwin's the one to just kind of give Levi the most subtle hint possible about, you know, he kicks away the injection and then he like gives it to, and Levi's the one to go, okay, I guess we give it to this guy. And so much more time passed. I mean, just in this terms of the show, like so many years pass, and then it goes, you know, Hanji takes over, and then Hanji hands it over to Armin, who's always been destined, and he's the character who's grown the most. Yes. He's the character who was like, I'm worthless. I froze, and Aaron sacrificed himself for me, and I couldn't
I
do anything.
Freeze,
I offer nothing.
I'm scared. And guess what she says? She says, like,
this line, dude.
Hanji instills upon him the fear that he's always had. He's not good enough. It should have been Irwin. Should have been somebody else. She goes, there is no one more suitable than you.
Yep.
She tells him what Irwin would have told him. You know, like she tells him what the father had to tell them, right?
She says it's a position that calls for a mindset of continuously pursuing understanding, which is exactly who Armin is.
I leave you, like everyone, in your hands. Now, listen, who's the most senior member here? Levi.
Yeah.
Why doesn't she promote Levi?
Because he's missing fingers.
No. It's not that.
He's disabled now.
Because he's always trolling.
No. She's like, hey, Levi, can I get them digits? No. No. The reason that she leaves him, you don't promote seniority, you promote ability.
Yeah.
And Levi is a fighter and a warrior. You want him in the field? He could be a great leader, but he's not the best leader. Armin is a strategist. He's the most like Irwin of anybody there.
Yeah, which
he
is
has
why
to take on the role.
Irwin even told both of them that in the past, that
he
saw.
He was the one who was going to.
Do you think his voice is going to finally drop?
I hope so.
He said Armin is our future.
He did say that.
Dude, if he drops him, my warriors.
Oh my gosh.
My warriors rage!
But like an octave,
My warriors rage. Yeah. So. She says, Levi is now your underling. Make him work hard, you know? And she walks up and he goes, hey, Four Eyes. She goes, my turn has come at last. And
she's like shaking. She's like, I have to make a really cool exit. Don't stop me.
Yeah.
She's still a fangirl.
Yeah. It's awesome. She's like part of the narrative. But also, she recognizes that all of the people before them, Mike and Irwin and And all these people, Petra, have all laid their lives down.
Yeah.
And she's going to go out fighting. And this kind of is the mirroring of the kind of the heaven that AOT has. It's a Valhalla. You go in there when you fight and you give your heart.
Yeah.
And she's like, this is my moment. There's no greater time to be a Spartan than this.
She's literally going to go out in a blaze of glory.
When she takes off, though, she takes off. She's like, see everyone. She like giggles and laughs. Like, oh, I made a cool exit. She like doesn't hug anybody. I'm like, just really upset that I feel like I didn't get a hug from Hanji that I needed all this time. And like, I definitely feel better.
I wish she would have hugged it out with her squad.
With everybody. Then. She should have just been like, you people are my family and I love you all. And
but she had to go like crazy warrior mode die. And I think that would have made her emotional. Her and yeah. So she couldn't do that.
Good points.
And then I also wonder if Levi basically hugged her because he was like, give your heart.
Dude, that's the best moment of the whole freaking episode.
Jesus, hug it all!
Like, she's like, I don't think I've ever heard you say that.
This whole scene, and that's the best line and the best moment in the whole thing is Levi going like, and he's walking away and he kind of does it from behind. Give your heart.
Yeah, dude. So good.
Yeah, the first time I heard you say that, I'm like, that's his way of smiling. He doesn't smile, but that's his way of doing it. Like,
I love how she just like gives him crap up to the very end. Like they just give each other crap throughout the entire show.
Their relationship.
Yeah. And he calls her Four Eyes right before he like says something really special.
That's his affection.
Yeah.
This brings us to the last flight of Hanji Zoe.
Dang, dude.
But before we see that, we see some really clean welds on the plane. Anya Capone is legit. Homeboy yeah. can weld.
Dude. Without a mask on. Nice. He doesn't have to have the...
That's right. He doesn't even need a mask.
The eye pro.
He just looks at it with his eyes. Yeah. we see the Titans and they're sliding down the hill. If they lose it all, they slip and fall. And
that's what the song is about.
Okay. Yeah. We see Hanji.
Well, I can't see it.
Three eyes.
Imagine if Levi called her three eyes.
Dang. 8 fingers. Yeah. Dang. Got him.
I kind of wonder, though, is if the reason they're not like embracing deeply is because the Japanese culture is a little less touchy.
Yeah.
I feel like I need someone to embrace
me. Yes, in Perfect Game. Sherlock's pointing this out. What? Looking back at Perfect Game, it's Jean tells Armin, he's like, you're the one. It needs to be you who makes the call. And that's I remember that. And even in that one.
Didn't Aaron tell...
They always all go to Armin.
Well, but my point
even is... Even then, when Hanji broke in, they were all like, Armin, what should we do? They all look at him. He's their leader. He's been their leader for a long time.
But what I'm saying is that Jean has the like natural leadership characteristics where he's like taller, he's got the big voice, like he has the natural leadership characteristics, kind of the charisma, I guess, probably the word I would say. He has all that and he acknowledges, nah, actually, well, I know I have these kind of leadership qualities, but the real leadership that we need is this
guy. Strategy, yes. The thinking.
Yeah, so he's like I'll lead with you, but not over you.
Yes,
yeah.
Not in your place, because I know you know what's right.
It makes, that's why a council, is wisdom and counselors. It's like, mm-hmm. not, one guy might have the talking skill and he's charismatic and people want to follow him, but he might not be the best strategist. And then another guy might be the best strategist, but he doesn't have the great like talking skill. So you go to like a situation like in Newsies, you get Jack and David. And one guy comes with all the ideas.
Oh, right.
But he can't say it very well. But Jack can freaking say it well.
He's going to be them bastards.
He's going to be them bastards. So, the last flight of Hanji Zoe.
Dude, what an epic flight it is.
The song comes on.
Yeah, jamming. The music.
She's just freaking going. I could watch this in 3D in theaters for like 2 hours.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I think Becca pointed this out, and I hadn't really thought about it, but Hanji really did have skills that were like Mikasa-level skills.
Yeah.
And she's Levi level skills.
Yeah.
She was a scout for a reason.
And she survived for a long time
because
she's awesome.
Yeah. I was thinking this when we watched it both times now that the Attack on Titan, the anime specifically, has this legacy of good fight scenes, specifically regarding the Titans and stuff. You get the great story and stuff, but you get some really good moments of action. That's really, the artwork's great, the animation's great, and it does function to pull you into the story. Mm-hmm. You can read a novel and novels can be amazing, but visuals do something that just the words on the page can't do, and even the good voice acting and stuff like that, they can't pull off. And I feel like I knew, I was like, if this is her last like flight, like it's got to be a good one. I mean, they really did. It's one of the best animated. I would stack this scene up against any of the others of my favorites of Aaron fighting Reiner. I think it's the first time when they fall off the wall and they get into it there and they get the, you know, Bertolt's up there doing steaming and doing whatnot. Like that scene, freaking epic. The Warhammer episode.
The only one I think is still superior is when Levi jacks up Zeke for the first time.
That will be number one for 100% of the time. Levi just wrecking Zeke into the Beast
over
Titan.
Over and over.
Best anime episode, best moment in any anime, maybe, period. Like, it's just incredible.
I want to invite Yelena over, you know, like kind of catfish her, you know, be like, hey, we'll come over, have some wine, you know, and she'll come over and I'll just, on all my monitors, I'll just have like highlights of like
Levi
dominating Zeke. Wrecking Zeke, you know, like, oh, sorry, I didn't mean for you to see that there. I was just having a good old time, you know?
Round three, fight.
Okay, but like Hanji takes down colossal titans, plural.
Yes.
Several.
Now, granted, they're just the pure titans. They're kind of like a little dumb. They aren't grabbing at her. Which I guess maybe they're not even, they're wall titans. They're not pure titans because they don't grab at her at all. But still.
But they're huge.
She's smart about it. She goes in with thunder spears. She makes them trip over each other. And it's
like,
cool.
Turn each other into meat paste.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Tarlok says there was 5 different animators on Hajay's sequence alone for this episode.
For sure. I can tell. It was incredibly
done. Amazing.
Obviously she's like fighting her way through. She uses all of her thunder spears, does tactically as much as she can, sees the titans are still getting close, and then goes in for close combat.
Goes melee.
With the swords, yeah. And she starts the whole, like, her beginning to light
she
on fire.
She starts orange slicing their necks.
Yes. She lights on fire in the process, and as soon as I saw that, I thought, well done. Like, what a tribute. No, this is what she deserves.
No greater way to go out than a
literal blaze of glory.
I said she was an angel. She was too good for the world. So long, Hanji. Everyone's crying, like, and the song is playing.
Yeah.
And Levi says, so long, Hanji. Watch us.
Yeah.
Bro.
Dude, she falls and like this long moment of her, like, her body. It's like, it is sad.
She looks like a star falling to the earth.
That's what she was, man.
I'm telling you, this is one of the first deaths where I see it and I cry with tears of, like, respect and salute.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I am sad, but I'm like, this is, you got
your
moment.
Such a,
you fulfilled. Yeah. And she actually says it. She's, it's time for me to, not fulfill my purpose. What does she say? I can't remember exactly
how
she
phrased it. It's my time, I think. It's my turn or something like that.
It's my turn. She doesn't say fulfill my purpose. It's I can't find it. It's somewhere in there. But it's a line where it's like, I need to complete my purpose or something like that. And she's saying that.
She's even nerding out about the titans as she's flying around. Like, oh, these colossals.
I know. I love how she's like, I feel the heat of your bodies. I'm about to destroy you. I'm like, oh my gosh. She
died doing what she loved, man.
That's so true. she's
you're beautiful. One. I'm going to destroy you now.
I'm surprised she didn't try to kiss one while she was up there. But anyway, Hanji falls to the ground. Everyone weeps and gnash their teeth.
And Pick are the only ones not absolutely weeping. Yeah. Even on Yokopon is crying.
Yeah, like, flying the plane.
Mikasa has thrown herself across the seat like a teenage girl across her bed after her first heartbreak.
John's
crying.
She's been through
Everybody's crying.
Anya Capone was crying, though, because he didn't use proper eye protection.
He's temporarily blind.
No.
He actually has no idea where the plane's going right
then. He loved Hanji, too. He was like, Hanji!
Yeah.
It's like, oh, yeah, my worlds were so perfect.
Such a great sequence. Totally recommend it. High praise for this part for sure. Then we see the like the beauty. Like, he gives us not only a great ending, but then he gives us the taste of Valhalla. Hanji wakes up. She's unburned.
She's in the footprint of like the one of the Titans, and you're like, what?
She wakes up and then she goes, airship.
She goes,
what?
Erwin? All of you guys. And then she looks up. She sees the plane leaving and she realizes.
Well, no. She says airship, and then Erwin goes, oh, it made it off. It made it away safely. Erwin actually, so, which means Erwin can see the events.
Yeah.
Erwin goes, it made it away safely. And then she turns around and is like, oh, yeah, whatever. And then
Erwin, all you guys. And then she goes, sees it, and then she realizes, I'm dead.
Yeah.
And then she changes her whole demeanor.
Yeah.
Her job's done.
Yeah.
Rest can happen. Now she's in Valhalla. Now she's in heaven. She can finally have her day of rest. And she gets up. She goes, man, I tell you, it almost killed me being the squad commander after you guys.
Yeah, having to deal with Aaron's idiocy. Whatever she keeps saying.
So they grab her. They pick her up. We see possibly Sasha in the background. We see Mikke.
For sure.
We see Petra, I think.
I think he's Sadie's maybe in the back of his head.
You see his bald dome. Yeah.
And
it's a good one.
And I love the part that they're like, welcome, and they go, tell us all about it. Like, this is what paradise is
beautiful
be
thing.
Like.
It's truly beautiful. No, what other? I still don't like the fact
that Hanjay still is missing an eye and Erwin's missing an arm. Like, come on.
It's like that. It's like having the wounds of Jesus.
Well, so somebody was saying that
they are the same way they were right before they died.
Right, yeah.
Someone was saying is because it's like Valhalla, right? Because it's like the glorious war. Like you keep your battle scars.
They bear the scars of their,
I see. Okay. It's a Viking thing.
Dang. On March 20th, Hanjay's English voice actor tweeted, started recording for the final season of Attack on Titan today, could not stop crying.
Dang. Yeah, I get that. I feel that.
I can't wait to watch
I feel that one for real. Okay, well, that brings us to the end of the first chapter. Obviously, we're going to be done here. We will be back next week to do chapter 2, which I think is actually going to be a little shorter in terms of minutes. This was like 32, 33 minutes for this part. So we're going to do that. Sinners is what it's called.
Yeah.
Sinners is the second chapter. I was saying this earlier when I was writing out the title for the Twitch stream. I was like, this is season 4, part 3, part 1, and then as far as our podcast is concerned, part 1 of 2 of part 1. That's how delineated
this show is. Very confusing sometimes.
We've done all
the final
content.
final season of the final times.
We've done all the content and we're gonna finish, but we're also gonna, we got some content for you guys about some predictions and some theories that some questions that still need to get answered and how we think it's gonna shake out. So look forward to those.
Yep.
And we appreciate you guys sticking around.
Send us your emails. Do we want to do like any predictions, or we kind of do them as we go.
Yeah, yeah. I think they're going to come next episode.
Next episode, we'll get a little heavy into that. Like, okay, how do we think it's going to end? It would be cool. I don't know if we have enough people that want to participate or whatever. It would be cool to do a little quick like bonus episode. Just get a bunch of emails together, get a bunch of people's opinions together. Yeah. But it has to be anime only. So the thing is, so many people have read the manga, it's hard to find people who like don't know exactly. But
yeah.
I'd love to hear about it. Anyway, if you listen to the episode, hit us up, shoot us an email. Congratulations, you made it through like a 2-hour podcast. You're like a Joe Rogan listener or something.
You must love anime.
You really do. All right, well, we salute you. Give your heart. And we're going to see you on the flip side next Friday. Twitch.tv/beyondthebasement at like 6:30 again.
Something like that.
Somewhere in there. Okay.
Hopefully.
All right.
All right.
Bye.
Hey guys, thanks again for watching and listening to our show, Beyond the Basement Podcast. If y'all are enjoying it, go ahead and leave us a 5-star review on iTunes or wherever else you listen to our show. Check out the description below for links to our awesome Attack on Titan merchandise. And join us live on Sunday nights on Facebook for all of season 4. And some of our best content is on YouTube, including me, so go ahead and check that out. And lastly, if you guys have any questions or just want to chat with us, please email us at beyondthebasementpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks again, and we'll see you guys in the next video.